skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 108 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm glad to be back.
Yay! Yay! So am I. It's been a minute, but we're back, baby. We're back. And we've got one hell of a show for you. So what we've got coming up?
Well, the main review this time is actually something that people can enjoy from the comfort of their own home. Yeah. It's a Netflix film, and it's by the Coen brothers. It's The Ballad of Buster come on, Scruggs.
Well done.
Jesus.
Well done.
I've been practicing that in the car. Just goes Scruggs.
Yeah. Our rewatch this time around is Battle Royale, that Japanese classic from 2000. Hear our thoughts later on.
And in stark opposition to that, our topic is our top three coming of age movies.
Synergy.
Yeah, the opposite, really.
We've also got a brand new quiz. And do you want to know the name?
Please.
Well, I don't know it because Ben's come up with this one. So yeah. We're going to have to... Are you going to tell us now?
No.
Oh.
So you can wait.
Yes. I'm looking forward to that because I literally have no idea.
Me too. And talking about looking forward to things, we're only going to be movie masturbating over the director, David Cronenberg.
Wow. That's going to be an interesting one.
It's going to be very interesting.
And of course, we'll be giving away some great prizes. We'll be giving you our pop culture recommendations of the week. I'm sort of forgetting because it's been so long. I'm thinking, what else do we do on this damn show?
You know, at school when you go off for 6 weeks summer holiday and you come back, you forget how to write.
All the
literally,
time.
Ben's forgot how to talk.
Totally. This is going to be a shit show.
Stick around for this.
But we will, of course, have all the other classic content that you know and love. Let's get started.
There are places I remember all my life, though some have changed, some forever, not for better, some have gone, and some...
So our first topic of conversation, since we've been away for a month, it's one that I think Gemma and Mark especially are going to love, but I'm going to enjoy it too. I've got some good picks as well. It's our top three coming-of-age movies. Now, Mark, I'm going to throw this to you first, because we know that the 80s was a big time for you.
Just a bit.
And we know that the 80s was a big time for coming-of-age movies as well. So I'm fully expecting all three of yours to be from the 80s. So, Mark, hit me.
I'm going to disappoint you. My first one isn't, but it's a film that I've talked about many a times, and I'm sure both of you would put your mortgages on it. It's Almost Famous.
You know what? I was going to say, does it rhyme with Shmoalmost Shmamous?
It exactly does. We've all seen this film. We did it as a rewatch. I'm not going to go too much into it because it's slowly becoming like The Blade Runner, The Shining, and Jaws because we talk about it on most episodes. But it's one of my favourite films of all time. It's always been in my top five since we started the podcast, and when we go back and we kind of give ourselves time to reevaluate our choices, it's never moved where some other films have. But this film's all about growing up. It's all about wanting to be that kid that's working for the Rolling Stone magazine, and there's so many life lessons to learn from this film. It's all about meeting that girl, falling in love, being with the band Stillwater, living life like that journalist that everyone would want to be. Everyone would want that life, to go and tour with one of your favorite bands in the 70s. It's a great, great film, and I think, in my opinion, probably Cameron Crowe's finest work.
Yeah.
It's by far one of my favourite soundtracks of all time. Definitely Kate Hudson's finest role. I don't think she's ever topped it. And since she's done a lot of chick flicks and stuff, and now she's got a family, but when you look back at that role of Penny Lane, she's the coolest groupie of all time. And she doesn't like being called a groupie.
No.
But amazing.
I never understood, really, why she didn't do more Kate Hudson, why she didn't go on to do bigger and better things than this.
I remember her being in How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, and it was just the worst chicken shit film I've ever seen. And I think she just got pigeonholed.
Yes, she did.
Which is a real shame.
But the thing is, you can break out of that pigeonhole. Matthew McConaughey was in that pigeonhole with her. I think he was in about 14 films with her, and he broke out of it, so why didn't she?
Yeah. Excuses.
Yeah.
We can't be too harsh, because she is our sister.
That's true.
So we've got to be quite nice. And she and Dad will be definitely listening to this.
Yeah.
But this film's just an absolute masterpiece. It really is. It's one of the most amazing films for the characters. Like Jason Lee's character, I absolutely love. Is it Billy Crudup? Is that what you say?
Yep.
one of the most likeable characters of all time. Everyone wants to be Russell and be that guitarist, and it's just in a great, great film. It's all about the characters, and that's what Cameron Crowe gives us in his finest hour. So it has to be this film for me.
I think you could shoehorn this into any topic, like top three dystopian movies. It's got to be Almost Famous, you know.
It did used to be The Thing, didn't it? But I've just had to let it go now. It's just got too much.
You said your favourite groupie was Penny Lane. My favourite was the one played by Fairuza Balk.
Oh yeah.
She's that's a good one for the old time listeners.
Say that name, Mark.
Fairuza Balk. I can't
just
even do it.
Fairuza.
Fairuza Balak. That's the one.
Christ.
Piss
don't,
off.
Don't ever change, please.
All right, Gemma, what's your pick?
My first pick is Submarine.
Oh, I've never seen this.
Amazing film.
Is it?
It's a definite recommend from me. So it's directed by Richard Ayoade, who I bloody love. And it stars Craig Roberts as 15-year-old Oliver Tate, who experiences the highs and lows of falling in love with the object of his desire, Jordana, and the pitfalls of the impending breakup of his parents' marriage. And it's really a dark comedy with lots of whimsical quirks. Stay with me. It's not twee.
Ben, come back.
You've not lost me yet.
But it has a surprisingly relatable heart to it. He creates this world where he just imagines that the world revolves around him. So he envisions the day he dies. He imagines like all of his school kids and all the school friends just rallying around, holding vigils for him, being on the news, broadcasting how sad the whole world is. But he also creates a little two-week movie of his and Jordana's time together. So it's a real kind of... It's a different way of looking at love when you're a teenager. It also carries with it the cringiest moments alive when you're just about coming to terms with, you know, the opposite sex and wanting to do it with ladies slash men. Do it with the ladies. There's a great scene where he decides to seduce Jordana into his bedroom and he tells her to shut his eyes. He says, no, wait a minute. He goes onto the bed, does the best David Brent-esque lie down with his leg cocked up in the air, says, now you can open him. She's scarper. She's not having it. But... it just plays with adolescence on a level that every single one of us can say, yeah, we've had that before, or we know somebody that's had that happen to them before. It's just embarrassing, but it's still lovely at the same time. And Richard Ayoade, the IT crowd, the crystal maze for crying out loud, he is a man of such quirk, and he brings this into this film. It's wonderful.
I don't know why I've not seen this.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, there you go.
There you go. Mm. Which is a great subscription service right now because we get The Office and we get lots of new stuff. Yeah. So it's well worth the money.
Worth every penny. That's Amazon Prime.
Netflix gave us nothing, so let's really keep on the old Amazon one.
Let's go on the AP family.
But speaking of people who haven't done that much more, Richard Ayoade, I think he's only directed one of the films.
Yeah,
was it The Double?
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to see more from him because he's such a weird chap. Oh, anything he does, I'm into.
I think you'll really enjoy this film.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's on my list.
When I see him, I always wonder to myself, is he like a wrestler in character, being this kind of quirky person? But even when they interview him on the red carpet and stuff, he seems to always be that same person from the IT crowd. So I'm a bit like, I'm not sure.
Did you ever see that interview he did with Krishnan Guru Murphy on Channel 4 promoting his book?
I did.
He's like, thank you, I've got nothing to thank for. It's just so cold.
It's so awkward, that interview. Yeah, check that out. It's funny. Very funny.
Great. So come on then, Ben, your topic.
Oh, I'll throw out my first one. It's a film called The Edge of 17.
I really want to watch this.
Have you seen it, Mark?
No, I haven't.
It's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. So it's the story of a teenage girl called Nadine whose life begins to fall apart after the death of her father and after she finds out that her best friend is sleeping with her brother, all the while trying to contend with the usual issues faced by teenage girls. It's a very sweet and often very, very funny film. And it's anchored by a typically brilliant lead performance by Hayley Steinfeld as Nadine. I absolutely adore Hayley Steinfeld. I think she's one of the best young actors in the game. We knew that years ago from True Grit. How great was she as Maddie Ross in True Grit? The shame of it is, in recent years, she's done very little acting. She's been concentrating more on her music career.
Yeah.
She puts out really anodyne, god-awful pop music when she should be acting in quality work like this. I don't understand.
Corey.
Yes, she's exactly like Corey. She is exactly like Corey. They were both former child actors.
They're now pursuing a music
career. With stellar music But this film just reminds you how great she is. She's so self-possessed and so assured as an actor. She always seems older than her years. I think in True Grit she was, what, I think 14, maybe even younger?
Yeah.
But she seemed about 50.
Yeah.
She's just an old woman in a young woman's body. And I love that about her because things that she say, they have more weight to them. There's more gravitas because she doesn't seem like a stupid little girl. She seems like a worldly wise woman, even though she is still young.
Yeah, and that's good point.
I just really, really love her work. One of the things that you guys will love about this film as well is the relationship between Hailee Steinfeld and her teacher, played by the great Woody Harrelson.
Oh.
He's so good in this. He's sarcastic and he's dry, but he clearly has a great deal of affection for her, and he looks after her at times when she's suicidal. And their relationship and the chemistry between the two of them is brilliant. To anyone who's not seen it, what I would say is the script is witty, the script is sharp, and the best recommendation I can give you is if you like Easy A...
Yep.
You will like The Edge of 17.
Sold. Fantastic.
Mm. And it's on Amazon Prime.
I would like to correct myself. It's actually on Netflix.
Oh.
Well, there you go. There's one reason to have Netflix.
Ugh. It sounds good. And I remember it came out around the Oscars time and everyone was raving about it.
Yeah.
Saying it's this big one and it didn't actually get any nominations, I don't think.
No, it was a shame. I think it might have been nominated for a couple of like Independent Spirit Awards and stuff. And it's not very old. It's only 2 years old.
It's quite recent.
Yeah, but it's a very, very good film.
Cracking.
Well, as Ben said, it wouldn't be right if I didn't have a film from the 80s.
Here we go.
And we did just talk about the man himself, Corey Feldman. So it's Stand By Me.
Of course.
Of course.
Set on the book The Body by Stephen King. And one of the lines I love so much is, "You never had friends like the ones you had when you were 12. And how true is that?
Aww.
Those friends then were the best. You would head off with probably your 3 or 4 best friends on adventures that could last for days. And what I like about that at that age is you didn't have that kind of worry about technology, about Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. You didn't have a mobile phone. You just went off on adventures and could just play, couldn't you? Mm-hmm. You could build dens. And that's the good times in life. I think, looking back, that's probably one of some of my favourite times of being a kid. Definitely.
I wish I could say the same thing, but I was on an army base. We were very restricted.
Your life is very different. But these guys basically set off on a hunt to try and find this body. And the chemistry between Corey Feldman and River Phoenix, I think, is absolutely phenomenal. And River Phoenix is someone that I miss dearly. When I watched his early work, I thought, this guy could have been the next kind of Leonardo DiCaprio. He could have been absolutely huge.
Big time.
And it's just one hell of a journey. There's so many moments you laugh. There's so many moments you want to cry. I'm not just saying this because we normally joke, but Corey Feldman is actually genuinely really good in this film.
All jokes aside, he genuinely was a very good child actor.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that. He was.
And in this, I thought it was one of by far the best adaptations of Stephen King, because there's so many done at the moment. In 2018, there's probably about 10 that have gone to Netflix.
Yeah.
They're all over the place. And for me, this is one of the ones that stands out. Obviously, stuff like Green Mile as well. But everyone always says to me when they watch stuff like Stranger Things, "Oh, it feels a lot like Stand By Me." And it's often imitated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like they always say, it's never bettered. And I don't think it is. I think this film is absolutely class. It's the writing, it's the script, and it is the child actors. It's what makes this film. And I think the story is brilliant. I've not actually read the book, so I probably should, because I think it's a small story by
him. It's not long.
Not at all. But the film's magical. And it's because it's been given the budget it deserves, like The Green Mile, Shawshank, which is what he doesn't always like as a writer. He likes the shitty, we've talked about this, how he likes the TV adaptations that are really bad acted. But this film, I'm sure he's a fan of, because it is a masterpiece.
What's that film where the kid gets stung by a bee and dies?
My Girl.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, ruined, sorry. But these are the two films that I always conflate. I always think of the two together. I remember being a kid, I'm sure they came out within a couple of years of each
other.
And I just always think of them in the same breath.
When you said the kid, it's Macaulay Culkin, dude.
Yeah.
That's to see him die after Home Alone, which you fell in love with Kevin. Mm-hmm. I remember I never went anywhere near a bee's nest after seeing that film, because I thought if I hit it, it's going to kill me.
Well, yeah.
Rightfully so. Don't mess around. Don't.
And the dad was Dan Aykroyd. Now, if you want a dad. I love Kurt Russell, but Dan Aykroyd's a good
dad.
Good,
he could be the stepdad.
He would be awesome. Yeah. That's a great film.
Yeah.
But the second one's terrible.
I didn't even know there was a second
one. Oh, yeah. Shame.
The kid comes back from the dead.
No.
Not the bees.
Skip to the end productions, yes. My Girl 3, not the bees.
Fuck Mac and Me too. Yeah, that's a good film. I think I've seen it come through on social media.
Oh,
yeah.
It was the most popular one that came through on social media.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. I'm right for
Come
so.
On then, My Girl. What's your next choice?
My Girl. Oh, don't die for me. I'm going for an angsty teen girl drama called The Virgin Suicides.
A brilliant film.
I've never seen it. I've heard of it.
I absolutely loved it. And it's by Sophia Coppola, and it's adapted from the novel of the same name written by Jeffrey Eugenides, which is very close to the book and the film. And it stars Kirsten Dunst as almost like the leader of these five sisters that are very mysterious, very brooding in 1970s America. And they're lusted after a group of neighborhood boys. They just want to get to know them a little bit more. But there's so much mystery surrounding them because they're almost locked in a house with James Woods and Kathleen Turner as their oppressive Catholic parents. And the whole film itself, the way how it's shot like a dream. So it has very sort of misty eye kind of cinematography to it. The score by Eyre is beautiful and haunting. And Kirsten Dunst, man, she was fantastic back in the day. Mm-hmm. I don't really see her as much as we do now. I know that she's obviously settled down with a family and a child, but she rules the roost in this film. She doesn't have a lot to say. A lot of it is conveyed by her face, her emotions, her facial expressions. And it's just being a girl when you're going through puberty and not really understanding the world and not accepting the world for what it is. There was something within it that really resonated with me. These girls, sadly, I mean, spoiler alert, the title kind of suggests exactly what happens to this, but they don't live forever.
Wow, really?
But it's their refusal to go into a world that is cruel, that isn't accepting of other people and who they are. They just defy it completely. So they decide to be in their own world, ergo suicide.
Mm.
But it is a but it is a wonderful film. The book is absolutely fantastic. Kirsten Dunst, like I said, is miles above the rest. Kathleen Turner does a great turn as this real kind of villainous kind of mother that she only wants the best for her kids. But the way how she wants the best for them is by locking them up and throwing away the key.
Oh, that never works.
Never.
Trust me.
Mm-mm.
Who was the guy that locked up people down his...
Fritzl.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Didn't work for him.
No, I mean, this is a film podcast after all.
Yes.
No, let's talk about Fritzl for 2 hours. Come on.
Fritz to the end, but no.
Oh, dear.
It's a good film, and Kirsten Dunst, I love. Elizabeth Town, I've talked about, which I'm sure, Ben, you've seen since the last episode.
Well, twice.
Yeah, what do you think?
It was so good, I had to watch it immediately.
I didn't ever say it, did I?
No, of course I haven't seen it.
But she's great, and she always gets a bit of a bad run. And again, someone we haven't seen for a while.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She was in season 2 of Fargo, and she was excellent in that.
She was also in Hidden Figures.
And she also was with the guy from Razorlight.
Johnny Burrell.
Yeah,
oh,
so that's probably why.
Isn't that
once he's been in, you don't want to do anything.
Isn't that Benny's hero?
It is.
Hey, Benny. How's it going?
We miss you, Benny.
Hey.
Did you notice how well everyone loved him? Like, everyone's Benny Yes, hashtag and stuff.
We're never having him back on.
No.
Forget that.
I'm done. I think he's done too much. I want him to come on and just be appreciated. Not like, oh, we love him, and not too much.
Oh,
we don't get that love.
I'm going to stick up for him.
All right, we'll get him back.
Yay!
Christmas? Yeah, we'll see. Ben, your second choice.
I'm going to keep this one brief because I've talked about this film a lot
Blade Runner.
Yeah, he did, yeah. Deckard really came back. Bear in mind, Deckard was only 4 years old, so you could consider it to be a coming-of-age movie. But no, I've not gone with that. I've gone with Spirited Away.
Oh!
As we all know, it's the story of Sen, who is a young girl who gets lost and enters the spirit world in the form of a bathhouse that's inhabited by spirits, witches, and monsters. Not only is the film a beautifully made masterpiece, which we've talked about many, many times, but it's also thematically rich. There are all sorts of themes within the film, but the coming of age of Sen is one of the strongest. You can make the case that Sen, going through this entrance into another world, is her entering this new age of maturity. The spirit realm is effectively this space between her childhood and between adulthood. You know, while she's in this spirit world, she's left to fend for herself without her parents. She experiences work for the first time. She's put to work, essentially, as a slave. And she also falls in love with a boy, our mate Haku, who, you know, one of our listeners made us a toy of.
Thank you again.
Yeah, thanks again for that. So she experiences all these things that a young girl doesn't. She's getting into that adolescence. And all these lessons that she learns will then give her self-confidence and allow her to grow as a person as she gets older. And it's the genius of Hayao Miyazaki that he creates these films that have so much going on beneath their gorgeous surfaces. They look great, but there's so much more underneath if you do the digging.
Yeah, it's a film that stays with you for the rest of your life.
What else is there we can really say about this film? We did a rewatch.
Yeah.
We've talked about it on most topics as well.
Yeah.
It is an absolute masterpiece. I love the animation. It's one of the first ones I watched that then got me into the studio. So I was like, Studio Ghibli's incredible. And then I went and got, you know, like Howl's Moving Castle and everything else. And it's a film that is just, it's so embedded in all our hearts that we all agree on.
Yeah,
it's just absolute perfection.
It's one of those films that if you ever come across anyone who says, I don't like animation, watch this.
Yeah.
I don't like foreign films, watch this. You know, it could answer all their questions.
It's
the
flawless
blueprint, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if they don't like this, then you know not to hang around with them.
Yeah.
Yes, correct.
I've got two things, this and Curb Your Enthusiasm. If you don't like them, we're not going to get on.
And you can go to hell.
They're very similar.
Very. We really round to the final one?
Yeah. Already?
Crazy. So mine is Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, my Lord.
I love this film.
I've not seen the film, but I've read the book.
Right. The book is easy to read because it's about 10 pages.
Yeah.
I've always said if I had kids, I'd read them this book. I'd always happily read it them because it is literally, I think it's 6 pages. Yeah. Sorry, it's just pictures.
Mostly pictures, yeah.
So when they announced that they were doing this film, I thought, that's never going to work. How are you going to make an hour and a half film out of this? But they gave it to Spike Jonze, who is the man, who knows what he's doing, and he created for me a beautiful, wonderful film that does take you to the world with the monsters, like Max did, and it's beautifully, beautifully crafted. The attention to detail that they do when they go to these woods, and there's all these wooden crafted little creatures and all these monsters and all this little, like, there's a scene where Max gets to put his head up in a tree with all the other monsters, and it sounds insane, but it's like this cave they've built, and instead of doing any CGI, it's all handcrafted, and these little boats going on the water is unbelievable. You think this would have took hours and hours, and the film got absolutely panned. It got criticized. Everyone said it's wank because they just didn't understand. It wasn't really like a kid's film. You wouldn't take your kids to this. It was an adult's film. It was scary. It had the voice of Tony Soprano. And that is his name. Don't correct me. That is his name. And I miss him. And his voice is perfect.
Yeah.
The soundtrack was done by
Karen O,
who is absolutely genius. It's and the soundtrack is one of those ones that you can enjoy if you haven't seen the film. It's just a really good work of art.
Yeah.
But so much so, I think if I had a son, I'd call him Max. I love it that much. This film is... Actually, I'll call my dog Max, not my son. a dog looks better as Max.
Relegated child to
but
dog.
Ben, check this out one time because it's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
I was just trying to think why I haven't seen it because usually I would seek out anything that Spike Jonze is involved in. Mm-hmm. But as you just said, then it got panned. So maybe that's why I didn't see it because the reviews were bad.
It just takes you back to when you were a kid, really, isn't it? Like, even the soundtrack, when you listen to the soundtrack by Karen O, it's very childlike, it's very innocent, and it just completely marries up with the rest of the film. It's beautiful.
But again, he's this naughty kid that walks around in a suit all day, which you see most kids nowadays dressed as, like, Avengers, don't you? You always see a kid who's about 8 or 9 who's dressed up as one of their heroes. He's just in this, like, bear outfit and he's like this king helmet, and he's just walking around his garden, his house, being a naughty kid like you want to be at that age, and you just think... There's no mortgage, there's no bills. That's the life I want. Yeah. That is exactly what I want to do. And he goes off to this world because he's such a bad kid and realises why people shouldn't hate each other, why people shouldn't be at each other's throats. And it's a nice way of doing it. It's a nice way to get the message across. It's a really fucking well-made film. And I don't understand, I still don't understand to this day why it didn't do well, because every adult I talk to says, I loved it, it was brilliant. I don't understand why it didn't do well. But it might be one of those ones that people bought on DVD, Blu-ray, and then it kind of grew, and it's a bit more of a cult following now, isn't it? It feels like.
Yeah.
I think it's more word of mouth.
Yeah.
You know, word of mouth films are much better than films that do, you know, extraordinarily well at the box office. You know, 50 Shades trilogy.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Compare that to
Fast
well,
and Furious 27.
Yeah.
Tokyo Drift. To a well-crafted film.
Yes. Yeah. Hmm. Well, I hope some people, after listening to this, check it out and let us know on Twitter.
Well, I will.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh,
there we go. And I'll do 17, whatever it is.
yes. Watch 17, whatever it is. That's a great film. The Edge of 17.
Yes.
Rolls off the tongue.
Come on, then.
So my last pick, I've gone for something more recent. I've gone for Lady Bird.
Oh, good pick.
So, directed by Greta Gerwig and starring Saoirse Ronan as the self-proclaimed Lady Bird. And we see her fall in love with a good and a bad boy, for that matter, falling out with her mum and best friend and getting ready to leave high school and start college. I think out of all of the coming-of-age films, this is the one that struck the biggest chord with me. You know, not just as a you know, self-doubting, depressed kind of teenager with the virgin suicide, but this is the time where I was just transitioning from A-levels into university. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those films that made me go, bloody hell, I wasn't the only one that was like that. The music of Alanis Morissette and Justin Timberlake kind of resonate with me too, because it was the stuff that I was listening to when I was her age. But I remember having tantrums when I was, you know, 17, 18 years old, and I shouldn't have been, just like Lady Bird was. Lady Bird can be a right dick in this film. You know, she's also a pretty cool girl, but she can be an absolute dick to her mum. But that's what we were like. We were like that as teenage girls. And looking back now, you realise the relationship that you had with your parents back then is completely different to what it is now.
Yeah.
And in the film, we see it, especially at the end, when she realises that her mother, when she drops her off at the airport, that still breaks my heart every time, because I can't imagine what my mum must have been like when she dropped me off of university for the first time. And it's moments like that that are really powerful with this film. You know, we see her decide that actually she does want to prove to her mum that she is worth it and that she does love her, despite all the disagreements they had throughout the whole film. Even the choice of boys, You know, we make some terrible decisions as ladies, you know. But she still learns from. She went with the good guy with, you know, the good looks and the good theatre skills. And she went for the bad boy who was going to treat her like absolute dirt. But hey, it's character building. And that's what I really like about this film. She's a completely different character from when we first see her at the beginning.
Yeah, I like this film, and I think we talked about it very briefly around the time it came out. I liked it, but I didn't love it. It didn't blow me away. But I don't think that's the fault of the film. I just think I'm not the target audience.
Yeah.
If I had ever been a teenage girl, I imagine I would have loved this more than I did. But I thought it was a very well-made film. I think Greta Gerwig is one to watch. She's going to do great things.
Very much so.
I was just fantasizing about you being a teenage girl.
I bet you were.
But I didn't understand the Oscar hype. I didn't. I thought it's a good film, but it's not great. That's my opinion. But when I was watching it the whole way through, I keep thinking, even the looks and everything, the hair, the jumpers, the cardigans, it was Gemma. I did. I kept thinking, this is Poochie on screen. It's very, very you.
Did you ever have kind of like pink hair?
Hello?
Well, pink hair? Really pink.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. It just makes you think of Pooch.
Yeah. It's just, I miss those days. But then again, I don't, so.
No. And it's all a lesson. Now you've realised who the good men are.
I do. And who the dicks are. And
exactly.
And I don't listen to Justin Timberlake anymore.
You should. Your album's really good. Save us, Ben. What's your final choice?
I am absolutely amazed we've managed to get through this topic without any duplicates.
Is this the first time in a really long time?
It might be.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So my final pick is Juno.
Oh, great
it's
film.
My fourth choice. But
So we all know Juno. It's an Oscar-winning film about a teenage girl dealing with an unplanned pregnancy and the various characters who inhabit her world. And let's talk about those characters, or more specifically, let's talk about the actors. Listen to this for a cast list. Not only Ellen Page, brilliantly as the title character, but we've also got Michael Cera, Jason Bateman, Alison Janney, Jennifer Garner, Rainn Wilson, and J.K. Simmons.
Not
Jesus
bad.
Christ.
God damn, that's an amazing cast, all of whom are amazing in the film as well. They're very fortunate as well to have a great script to work from by Diablo Cody. She won the Best Original Screenplay Oscar for it. And it was her first movie script. It was the first movie she'd ever written. So
it's crazy.
She knocked it out of the park with that one. The screenplay, it's funny, it's quirky. It uses bizarre but amusing slang that I'm absolutely adamant Cody made up as she went along.
Yeah.
Like calling people home slice and stuff like that. Who says that? No one says that. That's mental. But I love it. It makes the film unique. It makes it interesting and quirky. Ellen Page, let's talk about her for a minute. I think the only film I'd seen her in prior to this was Hard Candy.
Me too, yeah.
My God, that's a horrible film.
A horrible but brilliant
film.
Yeah.
So I didn't really know much about her, and I was absolutely blown away by how good she is. And Diablo Cody is one of those where you need to be on her wavelength to be able to deliver her dialogue.
Yeah.
And Ellen Page absolutely can do that. She killed it. Mm-hmm. She's so effortlessly cool, even though she's dealing with this life-altering situation and having to put up with her limp dick baby daddy played by Michael Cera.
Limp dick baby daddy!
You wouldn't want anything to do with him, would you? He's a fucking tit. But she's just as good in the heavier emotional moments as well. It's no surprise, actually, that she was nominated for the Best Actress for this. She didn't win, sadly, but she would have deserved it if she had. I tend to find with people, when I talk to people about this movie, that it's something of a Marmite movie. You either love it and you're on the wavelength with it, or you don't. That whole kind of weird slang, the home slice shit. Mm. Some people think this is fucking stupid. She's trying too hard to be hip and it doesn't work. So I tend to find that people are in one camp or the other.
I'm definitely on the camp of loving it.
Yeah.
I think it's an absolutely amazing film.
Yeah, I'm camp love too.
Yeah. Good,
well, I'm glad to hear that then.
Yeah.
We're all sensible, clever people.
And the soundtrack is bitching.
Oh, Belle and Sebastian.
Unreal. Yeah. Well, I was going to say Sonic Youth.
Oh,
with the
as
cover
well.
Of Superstar, which is great.
It's a hell of a fucking soundtrack. I remember buying it straight away.
Yeah, me too. Mm.
But, you know, just to go back on the cast, I don't think now, with the success all the people that I've mentioned have had, I don't think you could get that cast together
now.
No, sadly not.
For a film. Not a hell of a lot of bunts.
And if I could have any parents in the world, it would be J.K. Simmons.
Yeah.
Oh,
because
my God,
he is amazing. With Alison as well, the two of them.
J.K. Simmons and Alison Janney,
they
that
are.
Would be amazing.
They're so just, they're just ridiculous, aren't they? They don't give a shit. Yeah.
Whereas the worst parent is clearly Jason Bateman.
Ugh.
Trying it on with a 16-year-old.
Man-child.
Yeah. And he's making all that music in his little studio for adverts to make money. Ugh.
Oh, he can go to hell.
And I know this is a bit of a spoiler, so if you haven't seen this film, I'm sorry, but the fact that he then leaves... And Juno still decides to give the baby to Jennifer Garner's character. And Jennifer Garner is just heartbreaking in this film.
Oh, that bit. I'm always in tears during that whole scene.
Yeah.
Again, someone we haven't seen for a while.
Yeah.
Jennifer's decent.
Yeah. She's doing a TV show in the US at the minute called Camping, which the reviews haven't been very good.
Yeah.
Which is a shame.
It is a shame.
Yeah.
Boo-hoo.
Oh, well. But everyone else in there is having a great career.
Yeah.
Apart from, actually, Ellen did the remake of... What was it she did recently? I never watched it. She did an 80s remake. What was it called?
Oh, Flatliners.
Yeah, yeah. It's supposed to be absolutely horrendous.
Twatliners.
Yeah. Pantliners, but yeah.
Gashliners.
Don't, no, you've ruined
it's
it.
It's not no. rhyming now, are we?
Should we go to social media?
Yeah. Why not? We're going to head over to Twitter as always. So Brendan Cassidy at Brendan J. Cassidy said, "Where the Wild Things Are."
Brilliant.
Y Tu Mama Tambien.
Oh, that's a great film. I watched that at uni.
That was my fourth pick. Mm. So good. And Pinocchio.
I suppose so.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Brendan. Mustache Movie News at Mustache underscore News said, "Stand By Me," American Beauty.
Ooh. Yeah, right, that's tarnished for me now because of Mr. Wrongen.
Me too.
Mr. Wrongen. This sounds better than, "Hello, I'm Mr. Wrongen." Yeah, I'm not going to say what I want to call him.
Nah. And moving on to his third choice, Love, Simon, a very recent flick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's very good. Kate at capped underscore hangry said, "A Bronx Tale." That is so good.
Ooh, I've not seen it.
Really good. I'm very much recommended. The Outsiders.
Yeah, good film.
And Rushmore.
Very good.
Yeah. Mm. Old school.
Yeah. Rebecca Robson at Robson underscore Becky said, "Almost Famous." Agrees with you. Clueless. I'm surprised none of us had that.
Yeah. It is a damn good film.
I
wouldn't think of it as being a coming of age film. It's a brilliant film.
It's just fun.
As if.
And then the final, Lost Boys.
That is a great film, but I thought I can't have too much Corey.
You don't want to give him too much of a platform, even though we want to.
But is there such a thing as too much Corey?
Never.
Then over to Facebook, Tom Round said, "The Way, Way Back."
Yes, I saw that not so long ago. That's a decent film.
Is that Topher Grace?
If it's the one I'm thinking of, I think it's Steve Carell, but maybe I'm not thinking of the same film.
Never mind.
How long ago was it you watched it? Was it quite way back?
Move on.
I'm so glad he didn't play into his hands there. Superbad, too.
That's a great film.
Superbad is awesome. And The Kings of Summer.
That's a really good film. Old Ron Swanson's in that.
Martin White said, "The Perks of Being a Wallflower."
That's got Hermione in, yeah.
Oh, that is definitely otherwise known as Emma Watson.
Say it again. Hermione. Hermione.
Hermione.
Hermione.
Hermione.
Whatever her name is.
It's not Armani.
He also had two other suggestions. Okay. He said, "The Selfish Giant."
Don't know.
And "This Boy's Life," which is harrowing.
I've never seen that.
Young Leonardo DiCaprio. 13-year-old Leonardo DiCaprio.
How's no one had Boyhood? That is the ultimate.
It was in my top 10, but just didn't make the cut.
Yeah.
Russell Hewitt said, "This is England."
Yeah,
I suppose.
Yeah.
Lady Bird.
Yep.
And "Blue is the Warmest Colour."
Not seen that.
It's a cracking film. And then finally, we're off to Instagram. Daniel Robinson at All Grips Aren't We said, "Mean Creek."
That's a great film.
Good. Dazed and Confused.
That's an absolute masterpiece, but Ben hates it.
Not great.
He's not a fan.
All right.
And The Sandlot.
Don't know it.
Never heard of that in my life.
Yeah. That's okay, but these three, I'm pretty sure you will. So finally, Rabia at She Flourished underscore said, "My Girl."
Yes.
Mean Girls.
Brilliant.
And The Breakfast Club.
Yeah. I thought she was going to have another film with Girl in the title.
That was some good films.
It's outstanding selection, so thank you guys and keep them coming.
I think that's been the hardest topic yet because there's just so much to choose from.
It's a good one.
Tricky.
So is it my topic next?
Yeah.
This is going to be a thinker, and what I like about the topics that require a lot of thought is your reasons behind it. So this is more about the reasons for this, and I'm really, really looking forward to both of yours. So it's going to be our top three most disturbing films we've ever seen.
Whoa!
We haven't been to our local View cinema because we've all sat on our asses
in front of
the comfort of our own home and Netflix. Let's try again.
Netflix.
That's good. And we've actually watched a film called The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Why is it so hard? It doesn't roll off the tongue.
It's not hard for anyone else.
Buster Scruggs.
My favourite thing was you added an extra letter in there. Bless you.
But yes, it's the brand new film from the Coen brothers, who we all absolutely adore on this podcast.
Yes.
And the film is basically an anthology film comprised of six stories, each dealing with a different aspect of life in the Old West. The film's just come on Netflix, so if you haven't actually seen it right now, it's not one of those things where you have to get up, get dressed, put a scarf on, go outside in the cold. We protect, you know, we care about our listeners here.
We do.
You can just put on Netflix and it's there, ready. But it probably isn't on the main menu, which annoys me about Netflix. You have to search for
yeah.
it. These new films come out like Annihilation and you need to search for it. Mm-hmm. Sort it out, Netflix, and also give us a job. We'll come and review stuff on your site. So what I'm going to do in typical style is throw this to one of them, and I'm going to throw it to Ben. How are your thoughts on The Ballad of Buster Scruggs?
So let's just throw out a spoiler alert. We are going to spoil the hell out of it.
Always.
I don't know, is the answer. I'm kind of on the fence about it, because it's an anthology and because it has six different stories, I can't give it an overall judgment. Oh, I'm going to have to, aren't I, when I get to the end. But for me, of the six stories, I loved three of them and I didn't care about three of them.
Yeah.
It was very, very hit and miss, but that is the nature of the anthology format. Just as the good stories were beginning to catch on, they ended and then it moved on to one I didn't care about. So it didn't entirely work for me, even though there is a lot to enjoy.
Yep. Gemma.
There were three of the tales that were fantastic and three of the ones that were like, okay. But what I hate doing the most is underestimating the Western genre. Mm. And I do it every single time. I did it with this film, I will admit. But I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I thought this was a good 2 hours, 12 minutes, which is the longest Coen Brothers film
yep.
known to man. I did want to watch it straight away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it and I was like, oh, this is jolly good fun. Let's go and put it on again. But there's some outstanding acting from a particular lady who I'd like to highlight called Zoe Kazan, also Tom Waits, but I will get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, hang on, shut up. You just say if you like it or not.
It's meant to be a basic intro. Running off at the mouth.
I am a confident 21st century woman.
Let's not talk about the cinematography, you know, fucking hell. I really enjoyed it, but I felt 2 hours, 12 minutes was a bit too long. I'd have shaven probably 20, 25 minutes off it, mm-hmm. which mean we could have definitely got rid of the sixth story, which did my head in.
Agreed.
The fourth and probably the second, whichever it was. I lost the order.
I'm intrigued to see which ones we liked and which ones we didn't. Okay. We'll get to that.
But I did enjoy it, and it was nice. I'm probably quite grateful we didn't go to the cinema and see it. It felt quite nice to be at home in the comfort of my own home, be able to go and get some popcorn or some Bueno white Kinder chocolate.
But
it was really nice just to be able to not have to go out and watch it. It's really hard to try and sum up if you love it or it's pretty good, but there's so much I didn't like about it. So let's now spend some time why we didn't like it.
That's what I'd rather do.
Yeah, and then we'll finish.
As I say, the key to it is there were six different segments. They all felt differently. They were thematically different, stylistically different. So you can't give an overall decision on whether it's good or not, although, as I say, we're going to have to. So let's talk about this. I know this is a bit, maybe a bit strict of a way of doing it, but let's talk about the six segments individually,
yeah,
I think, because they're like mini-movies.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the first one. So The Ballad of Buster Scruggs itself, starring Tim Blake Nelson. This was one of the six that I loved.
Yes,
me too. I thought it was brilliant. We're all on the same page on that one. It's so nice to see Tim Blake Nelson getting a leading role, because he's always a sidekick, he's always a character actor. So putting him out front and centre is a rare thing for him. And I thought he was brilliant. I thought he's so cool, so funny. And I was reading an article online that said that this short felt like a Looney Tunes cartoon.
I've got this on my notes. It reminded me of a Bugs Bunny old cartoon.
Yeah, it's the way he's turning to the camera, breaking the fourth wall, you know, saying something witty, then shooting someone. It felt exactly like an old Looney Tunes.
Making violence comedic.
Yes.
Even when he's shooting up all of those bad men in the barn, goes, here, well, let me get that door for you, fella. And he's there crawling out, like bleeding, clearly going to die. But and he's just got this irresistible charm and smile about him.
And the songs are funny.
Yeah.
Normally that kind of thing would put me off.
Surly Joe. Surly Joe.
And that's probably the most frustrating thing, is that this is how well it started. It was so strong. It reminded me of kind of a tribute to Eastwood, John Wayne films. It was straight in there with like, this is awesome.
Yeah, I watched it and I thought, I wonder if Ben's going to like this, considering he said, paint your wagon. Was an abomination.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, Tim Blake, what's his
Tim Blake Nelson.
Oh,
absolute treasure.
Yeah. And one of the best parts in this film, specifically in this segment, is when he kills Surly Joe and he doesn't have a gun on him.
Oh, man.
So he kicks the table and the wooden plank on the table hits Surly Joe's gun and shoots him in the face, and he does it, I think, three times, and it's hilarious. And one of the benefits of watching a film on Netflix and not being at the cinema is I was able to rewind that bit and watch it again straight away, because it's so funny.
And it's so inventive.
Inventive.
Never seen a death like that before. And it's like, well, I didn't hear him, you see.
Exactly.
So we love the first part, but as I just said, then does it go downhill? Or are you still rubbing it?
Okay, so the second segment starring James Franco was cack.
I did not care for it.
No.
And so we're on the same page again. Yeah. There we go.
Which is good. But had he been a bad wrong'un before this was filmed, or was it after? Because I was quite surprised to see him in it after allegations that took place at the end of last year.
And there's been a quite recent story, not about, what, a month, 2 months old, concerning his co-star from Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, him and Busy Phillips.
Mm.
Yeah. But it did have Stephen Root.
Yes.
Who was very funny.
He was, but that was about
this was it.
It.
I didn't care. And when he got hung and he was hanging from the tree, I wish they had shot him.
Oh, one good thing about that. Vinci!
Yes!
Bloody good rep.
Bloody good rep.
He's doing well for himself.
Vinci always pops up in stuff.
Because he was in The Witch, wasn't he? Which is a good horror.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and he's actually... I always want him to say, "Why are you down there, love?" or something while he's... Because I can't see him as not doing that character.
Yeah.
But it was good to see him actually... Yeah. Being very serious, and he did well.
He did.
Well in the pink.
Yeah. But I just want to move on from that bit.
I didn't like it. I thought it was shit. So the third one was the Liam Neeson one where he's the showman and he's with the amputee.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Nah.
This again, didn't like it. And three for three, aren't we?
This is good. We're going to have some differences, but it was good to see him, Liam Neeson not just doing any old shit for money because he looked like he cared again. And this is when I was going to start talking about it. The cinematography and the actual shots in this was beautiful.
Yeah.
And it felt wasted with the story. Because I was just talking then about James Franco hanging from the tree. Some of those shots were incredible, but it wasted.
I like the way how the colour makes it feel like that kind of cold winter in the Wild West.
Nebraska winter.
We always think of the Wild West as these sort of like vistas of sand and blue skies and like no water whatsoever. But this kind of, it was like the Revenant, kind of that kind of feeling, that unforgiving kind of Western winters.
It just reminded you how good the Coen Brothers are.
Yeah. I do think the cinematography was very good from Bruno Debonell all the way through the film, but I couldn't help but think that it would have been better if Roger Deakins did it. Because Deakins does most of the Coen stuff. Bruno Debonell's done a couple of theirs, but I would have... Deakins is the king at Westerns. Yeah. No one does them better than him. So I missed him a little bit.
Maybe he was on vacay.
Maybe he was on vacay, Gemma. Mm. But one of the other things that I noticed in this film, you know the guy who plays the amputee?
Yeah.
I'm looking at his face and thinking, who is that? I kind of recognise him. Yeah. And it's Harry Potter's twat of a cousin, Dudley Dursley.
Little fat kid.
Mark's never seen him, so he doesn't know.
No, I've not seen the Harry Potter films, but I know who you're on about because I've seen him on trailers and stuff.
Yay, high, wide face.
Yeah.
That kid.
And he's not so wide now.
No.
There we go. So we're good. We're doing well here. So what about the fourth scene, which is the longest story, 22 minutes long?
The Tom Waits one where he's a grizzled old prospector. Yep.
This is the one for me where it jumped back up again. This feels like Once Upon a Time in the West.
It's my favourite one, I think. Mm-hmm. I thought it was absolutely brilliant, this.
Yeah, Tom Waits, I mean, he's a renowned singer. Mm-hmm. But my God, this guy can act.
Yep.
He's really grizzly too. He kind of reminded me of Nick Nolte.
Yeah.
Like
very much
double for double. But even so, the story is so simple. It's just a prospector searching and digging for gold and then gets stabbed in the back by someone who spied on him.
Yeah.
That is it. But when you consider the surroundings of where this is taking place, I really was taken away with just how beautiful the whole screen looked. It was marvellous.
Plus the tone change when he finds the gold and he's on the floor and he's going and getting diggy. And you're like, this is amazing. And then the pan out shot of in the background and you're like, bastard.
Yeah, you absolutely.
Yeah. It reminded me of the Joker in the beginning of The Dark Knight when he's like, who are you to kill?
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. So good.
It's so good. And Tom Waits, like Gemma mentioned, is by trade a singer, and he doesn't act that often, but when he does, he's always great. He was good in Seven Psychopaths. A long way back now, he was in Mystery Men. Do you remember that?
Oh, God.
He's always good, and he's one of them because he's, I think even when he was a young man, he was a grizzled old man.
He was,
so he's perfect in those kind of roles. Now, I want to see him do more because he was brilliant in this.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
He's also responsible for my now new favourite insult. You measly skunk! You got guts!
So we all agree in right now this is the best of the lot of the stories.
I would say this one is just above the first one for me as the best.
Wow. So now we're going to see if we're going to all agree. All
right. So the fifth one is the one starring Zoe Kazan as the woman on the Oregon Trail. Again, I thought this was brilliant.
Loved.
I thought it was really good.
I loved it. And for me, this should have been the final chapter.
Yes, agreed.
I agree.
And it would have then been, it would have chopped off 20 minutes and it would have been great. Because that whole landscape, everything, I was like, this is amazing. That final scene, absolutely perfect.
Yeah. You could really make a whole story of this because it was... She was battled by her nerves throughout the whole film, and ultimately it's the nerves that, spoiler alert, got her killed by herself.
Yeah.
And I mean, that whole thing about when she's detached away from the gathering and she's got that chap with the horse and they're confronted by the Native Americans on the hill, that whole sequence was absolutely wonderful because you didn't know whether or not they were going to keep coming back to attack them. But when that guy gets hit by one of the Native Americans, you don't even hear the gunshot because you imagine that it might have collided with the same time he pulled the trigger for his gun. But that reveal when the dog is just barking over the woman's body, and it is, it's such a gut punch. It really is. And it's what the Coen brothers do so well with tragedy.
Because at first I thought, oh shit, did one of the Native Americans get her? And then I realised, no, she just follows his instruction. He said to her that if I die, you got to kill yourself.
Yeah.
And she thought he died, so she pops herself one.
Man, so
gut punch is the word.
Especially because she'd just met the guy on the trail who was, you know, he proposed to her and he was a lovely guy and looking out for her. And you're thinking they're going to live happily ever after and have a farm and all that.
Yeah.
And it ends this way. Kick it's, in the dick.
It's so sad.
But what an ending if that was just him. Is he holding the dog on? He's in
I think
sunset.
The dog's walking.
Yeah.
Next
dog's
to him,
walking
yeah.
with him.
Beautiful shot. Yeah. And that could just close down, credits up.
Because he's got to tell him. He's got to tell him now. But it's just a wonderful turn by Zoe Kazan. We saw her last time in The Big Sick. Mm-hmm. Absolutely marvellous, really held that film.
I do love her, she's brilliant.
She's excellent. Yeah.
I want more Kazan.
Yeah.
Shazam Kazan.
So then were you furious? Because the final one for me was one of the worst. This stagecoach theme was
rubbish.
It wasn't conclusive, it was boring, and it felt for me a bit like, what's that Tarantino film?
Where Hateful Eight, it did.
Because I think the whole opening scene of Hateful Eight is some dudes on a stagecoach talking shit.
For about an hour.
Yeah.
Now, did they do this particular tale because it demonstrated how well the Coen brothers do scripts?
Maybe, because it was very wordy, wasn't
but
it? There was no action.
But it didn't hold my attention.
No.
Something, again, that I read in this article is that all these characters are dead. So the two guys who say they're bounty hunters, they actually initially say that they're reapers. And then all the other three are talking about their lives and, you know, what it means to be in love and, you know, what if people are all the same or they're all different, blah, 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 blah. And then when they get to that spooky building, they're all kind of scared to go in because apparently the theory is this is the afterlife. This is them going into the afterlife.
Ah.
So they're soul reapers as opposed to, you know, living, breathing bounty hunters, which makes it slightly more interesting, but still not good.
I'm glad you've said that because that was the conclusion that I came to after watching that. But I don't think it was the ending that this film should have had.
No.
It ruined it for me.
The one good thing, though, is our mate Saul Rubinek was in it.
And he is actually genuinely a friend of mine and Ben's.
Yeah. Well, probably stretching it, but we met him, we interviewed him once at a Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And wasn't he just the coolest?
The coolest.
Proper old Hollywood, just full of stories. Like, we could have talked to him for days.
Yeah, he's someone I'd love to get on Mark and Me, genuinely, because he would just talk for hours.
Get him on.
Yeah.
There you go.
On markandme.com for other guests. So we were 6 for 6 then, guys.
Yeah, we all agree.
Which is nice to hear.
Yeah. Which is interesting then, because maybe it's not just that we're all on the same page. Maybe it's just those three are good and those three are shit. Maybe the rest of the world agrees with us. Let us know on Twitter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But imagine chopping it in half, having just those three as about an hour. It'd be brilliant.
Yeah. The interesting thing is it wasn't always going to be a film. It was going to be an anthology TV series.
Yeah.
So it's going to be 6 separate episodes. And imagine that. That would have been even worse, I think, because at least, I suppose if it was going to be on Netflix, you'd have been able to binge them in a row anyway, so it wouldn't have really made much difference. But I think they would have had to make each episode longer to be 6 separate episodes. I couldn't have taken any more than the Franco one.
No, I'd have given up. Yeah. I'd have turned off, and then I'd have missed out on episode 5.
Yeah.
Shame.
More Best of Scruggs, though.
Yep.
Surly Joe. Surly Joe.
So I don't know what else there is. We've done quite well here.
Yeah,
we've
done it. You know, the segments that worked were brilliantly written because that's what the Coens do. All of it was beautifully directed because that's what the Coens do. The cinematography was strong, as we've said.
Yeah.
The music was your classic sort of Old West music. Carter Burwell does the music for Coen films every time and he always knocks it out of the park. So what more is there to say? I don't know.
Just for us to score it.
I think
so. So Ben, you lead it off. It's a hard one, isn't it?
It is a tough one. I'm going to say a solid 7.
That seems fair.
Yeah.
Gemma?
I think a 7 is very, very reasonable. So 7.
I'm tired and can't be bothered to do maths.
So wonderful.
It's a 7, but I think 7's still good.
Yeah.
It is.
So the Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Scruggs.
Skip to the end. 7 out of 10. It's competition time!
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I did? Even though we had like a month off,
2 weeks
ago, on the Sunday, at around 7 o'clock at night, I went,
it's...
in the shower.
7 o'clock!
It just felt right. Yeah. It's Domino's pizza time! Sorry, Pizza Hut. I'll never be unfaithful to Domino's. Can't do that. Couldn't do it.
How dare you?
If you listened to our last episode, all those many weeks ago with Benny on. Remember Benny?
Oh.
I've forgotten him.
God rest his soul.
Yay, Benny!
We had a Halloween as our main review, and I think the world was quite shocked that Ben loved it.
Yeah, man.
Very much so. And I think since then, after we recorded, you actually said you'd probably give it an 8 or a 9.
Yeah, because after we recorded, me, you and Benny went to the pub and we started discussing it, and he was kind of annoyed at himself, I think, because he felt he underscored it.
Yeah.
And I kind of agree. I think it's even better than we thought.
Yeah. Aww. I'm looking forward to it to come out on home release so I can enjoy it again.
Home release, home slice.
Definitely. So thanks to our friends at Universal, they gave us a bundle, which was one of our most popular competitions online, which consisted of a coat, a t-shirt, a torch and a beanie hat. And I'm telling you now, if Mike Myers came after me, I would want a torch and a beanie hat to beat off that big bastard.
I bet you'd beat him off.
I would. And the question we put out there, and Gemma's going to definitely know the answer to this, was who directed the original Halloween?
John Carpenter.
It's true. And I can't say Michael, it's Mikhail Woods got that right. Mikhail. Hey, on Facebook. So you're going to be getting that in the post. We're bloody generous, aren't we?
Kinda.
It didn't stop there. Because we were reviewing Halloween, Last Exit to Nowhere gave us an awesome original 1978 style t-shirt, which is bloody beautiful. And what we said was, who is the killer in Halloween? So, Ben?
Michael Myers.
It's true.
Not Mikhail Myers.
No. I wonder if that's in like the Spanish version or the...
It'd be Miguel. Yeah. Miguel Myers.
Miguel. I'll kill you. That sounds. That
sounds.
That sounds like Borat.
Yeah, I love that. In the Spanish one, he's just he's really lippy. He's like, "I will kill you.
Watch out. Like,
time to die."
Carries a plate of tapas.
That's racist. Too far.
We're not here for that. So Emma Grange got that right, and we'll be sending you that. And what I like about the Winners Are T-shirts and the Funkers, they always post pictures, and I love seeing how happy we make
Absolutely.
You. Thanks to our good friends at Last Exit. But because we did Jaws as our rewatch, as our rewatch,
Surly Joe.
I really did enjoy listening back to that. I don't want to like masturbate myself, but when I listened back, I thought that was good.
Well, the Jaws, it was very good.
It was good fun. And what we said was to win their T-shirt. Finish the sentence. Was it? We are going to need a bigger car, boat, or plane. Gemma,
could be boat.
It is, and Rob Dowsett on Twitter. Got that right, so we'll be sending that in the post. As it was Halloween, we had some Funkos, so we had Halloween, Child's Play, Nightmare on Elm Street, Hellraiser, Psycho. We had them all, and they look good as a bundle. And we said, what was everyone's favourite horror movie? Did you see the amount of response?
Yeah.
It
was insane. Because I like them all, I kind of regret it. It was like 700.
Jeez.
That was good. But anyway, our favourite horror film from Anthony Bishop on Instagram was The Exorcist.
Okay.
Good choice.
Now, Last Exit to Nowhere are bloody good to us, and they've given us some t-shirts. So, in true fashion. I don't even remember because it was like 4 weeks ago. But the first one we got, which I think is for Ben.
No, it's mine.
Is this one.
Oh, yes. It's my Blade Runner one.
Nice.
Of course it's got Blade Runner. I've obviously got this Jaws one.
Not clearly.
And Gemma.
Thank you. Woohoo. Come out to play,
Warriors. I always think of when we did High Five. Warriors, come out to play. But again, thanks to those guys for sending us t-shirts.
Thank you
very much.
But also, on the last episode, Ben said he would love one of the pops. So I spoke to our good friend Sully, who got us the Pinhead Funko for Ben.
Oh, yes, thank you very much, Sully.
He doesn't even love horror, but the Funko's amazing.
That Pinhead Funko rules,
That's amazing.
Cenobite.
Yeah.
And I couldn't leave Gemma out, so we got you the Clockwork Orange.
That's very cool. He's even got the eyelash. Thank you very much.
I'd love it if his eyes moved in a weird, like, sinister way with the milk as the... as he does on the trailer. He doesn't. You're looking as if he does, like he's human, but...
I'm literally like, I'm trying it out now.
We should probably give some more away. I think we're just giving ourselves lots of
go
stuff
go on,
here.
Then.
We also had some Onkyo VCPX30 voice-activated speakers. Now, these are really cool. Mm. And we said, what podcast would you listen to when you first got it? What would you listen to, Ben?
I'd listen to the Skip to the End podcast.
And where would you listen to it on?
I'd be in my living room.
Yeah?
Mm.
And what sort of would you use, like iTunes or...
Yes, any of the good services that are out there. iTunes, Spotify,
Podomatic,
Deezer.
Yeah. What's the other one? iHeartRadio. That's a good one. Rachel Thompson via email. We'll be getting that in the post.
Cracking.
Should we give some more away? I keep saying it, but shall we?
I think so.
This is a big one. As you know, we were actually going to review Fantastic Beasts, the new film, but we didn't.
No.
But that doesn't stop our good friends from Warner Brothers giving us a bundle for the brand new film, The Crimes of Grindelwald. Is that right?
Grindelwald. Yeah, you got that.
They've given us a Deathly Hallows keyring, a wand, a bendable bow truckle, a tote bag, a t-shirt, a hoodie, two brand new Funkos from Dumbledore, from Niffler Duo and Dumbledore's wand, and two sets of bookmarks and notebooks. Now, these are really, really exclusive. You know what people are like with Harry Potter.
You did well there. It seems as you've never seen any of the Harry Potter films. That, you might as well have been reading Arabic.
But do you know what the best thing is? There's two characters that I didn't read.
Go on. Is it
Matagot? Matagot? This one. Third from bottom.
I don't know.
Matagot. I've never heard of that one. I don't know.
Well, they've got a Funko for that.
Maybe it's a silent
And the Grindelwald one.
Yeah, you got
that's
there.
A lot of Funkos. Yeah. And it's not even from Funko, so that's good. What we'll say is, which fantastic beast lives underwater? That's not easy, but there's only one. You're looking at me as if like I should know. I don't know the answer. I don't care.
Oh, okay. Oh, so it's not Jaws. It's actually in the film.
It is actually in the film. Okay. Also, a brand new film called Nativity Rocks is coming out.
Ooh,
have you seen this?
Oh, great. Put that on top of my list.
Should we do that as our next review? We'll see.
Well.
But we're going to give away a kid-sized electric guitar, a rock sticker pack, a rock sticker painting set, a guitar plectrum keychain, a bobble hat, and a scarf. Look at the little guitar, though. That's pretty ace.
Yeah.
If you want to form a band like Corey's Angels, you could do it with that. What school do the kids attend in the film? That's for proper, genuine fans.
Got to be hardcore to know that.
Definitely. Also, you may have seen on Twitter this week, we had a competition, thanks to our friends at Universal, for the new Grinch film.
Yes.
Which is supposed to be really good. I want to go and see it. Just, actually, do you know what? I was in town the other day doing some Christmas shopping. I went to, have you ever been to Build-A-Bear?
Yes. Well, I've been past it. I'm familiar with it.
Yeah.
If you ever got any nephews or nieces or anyone you need to buy presents for, don't go there. It's a rip-off, right? So you buy the actual skin for the thing, and then they fit it up, and then you can pay extra, and it can be scented, or you can have it, like, moved.
Scented?
Yeah,
what?
You can have it scented, so that it smells. You can have a patch sewn on it. You know, not scented, so it smells, not like the other type of scented. But you can have, like, an embroidered patch put on it. You can put a heartbeat in it, so when you squeeze it starts beating.
That's mental.
It ends up being about £95.
Forget that.
So instead I went to Waterstones and they had like a Grinch one in there for about a fiver.
Bonus.
Much better.
Good on you.
That's Waterstones. But who directs the brand new Grinch film? Because this is a real popular bundle and everyone wants to win it.
Okay.
Last Exit to Nowhere have come along and they haven't really got anything for the main review, which is it's understandable.
Yeah.
And they've not got anything for the rewatch. Battle Royale. They just haven't. So they've done what they did last time, which was very popular, Choose Your Own T-shirt, which I like. But they have released a brand new range of beanie hats and it is getting quite cold out there. I don't know about you guys.
Oh, it's brassic.
A little bit nippy.
It is a bit. So what I want to do and make people work for this, what film left you feeling cold? How's that sound?
That's very good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Also, Richard Sounds, they don't stop. They've come back with some AKG N60 noise cancelling headphones. Uh-huh. Really good. Decent. What band would you listen to? Let's make it really easy.
Okay.
What band would you listen to? And finally, our good friends at Funko. Again, they've not got Battle Royale Funkos, which they should.
I think that would
be awesome. Imagine like the chase one with like all the blood and stuff. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Wouldn't sell.
Necklace on the neck.
So our good friend Sully has said, why don't you give away some Trading Places Funkos that have just come out, a full set. So Eddie Murphy plays which character in that film?
Okay.
That's a simple one, but this is the best one. They've given us a full set of Die Hard Funkos.
Yay!
That's what we want. Bruce Willis plays which character in Die Hard?
Easy. Before we wrap this up, on our last episode, we said we'd give away some Funkos to people who showed us pictures of their mullets.
Oh, yes.
Did we?
Yes, we did. Did you see online?
Yeah, oh, best hashtag ever.
So many mullet
pictures. Some really classic ones as well.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just from Compass. They were genuine people. But I was thinking to myself, a Funko costs around £10.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Some of the ones, how much dignity you'd lose from going out to like 50,000 people. Did you see some of the photos?
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're not going to do that again because I kind of thought no one would. And I was like, Sully, we need like 35 Funkos. I think he's pissed off. But yeah, stay tuned. And what we'll do, we'll come back in 2 weeks' time and announce the winners from all these incredible competitions.
It is now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we talk about our favourite film from a particular director. Now, all those many moons ago when we were last on, we chose David Cronenberg. I think this is going to be a very interesting one. So on this occasion, I want to throw it out to Mark first. Mark, thoughts?
One thing I will say is it wasn't easy. And sometimes you have a locked-in film. And I remember when you announce it and you put it out the hat, instantly you go, yeah, it's that.
Yeah.
This was probably between three or four.
Wow.
Because he has such a random history, doesn't he? Every film he does is very different.
Yeah.
And I've chose one for me that isn't a typical Cronenberg film.
Okay.
And I think you may have it too, Ben. A History of Violence.
Yeah, I've got it too.
I've got it three.
Yes! So instead of focusing just on me, why don't we change it this time around?
Okay.
And we all just jizz over this film.
Okay.
Because for me, it is an absolute masterpiece, and it's a film I fell in love with more since we did the podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, when I was coming up with my decision, again, this was the first one that came into my head, but I thought, right, I'll have a look at IMDb, have a look at everything he's done to see if there's anything I prefer. It dawned on me that I'd only, in fact, seen three of his films. I've seen this and Eastern Promises, both of which I love. So that was where the difficulty came in, picking one or the other out of those two. The only other film of his I'd seen was Crash, which is wank.
Gash.
So that was gash, indeed. So that was never going to be my pick. So it wasn't difficult in the sense I only had three to pick from. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it had to be this one for me. It's a masterwork.
Yeah, I remember watching The Fly at a very young age. And I remember his kind of history with body shock horror.
Yeah.
So I remember Cronenberg more for that. But I think for this film, this showed the level of maturity that he has over the years. And I think it's one of those films where everything happens for a reason. There is a purpose for every shot. There is a purpose for every line spoken. The switcheroo halfway through the film is something that you don't often see in many other projects. Mm-hmm. But this is done to a way where you can't help but just admire it. It is just something that it directing obviously is like taught over the years, and I think Cronenberg is one of those finest examples where he's gone from one particular style of direction to this level. It's astounding.
When you look at his old work like Videodrome, mm-hmm. you can't believe that he's done this. It's probably his most accessible film, actually. If you say to someone, oh, this is by the same guy that did The Fly, you think, fuck off.
Yeah.
His early work
His
early work is disgusting. Like, it gets right under your skin.
Yeah.
Some of those
films
I definitely think will make the topic next time because they're very disturbing. It's really early work. And this is very different. It's stylish.
Yeah.
It's a very, very well shot film. Every single, like you said, frame has a reason. But it's the acting performances he got as well. Like, is it Viggo Mortensen?
Mortensen.
Yeah.
His finest role ever. I'll argue with anyone. There's no way that his stuff in Lord of the Rings or anything like that gets anywhere close to this. Ed Harris, for me, one of the best, harrowing, awful, fucked up,
Joey,
disgusting.
Joey, just that. Hearing him say Joey, he's terrifying.
So creepy and so terrifying. And is it Maria Bello?
Maria Bello.
Amazing.
My God, like those three are absolutely outstanding, and they work so well together. And the film is just. It is an absolute masterpiece. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And when we did Eastern Promises, I hadn't seen it. So to do that as a rewatch so soon after, it was like, yeah, I can see why Ben would have difficulty choosing which. They're both fucking ace. But History of Violence for me set the stone. It was setting the bar. And it was like, it's never been topped.
And to go back to what you said there about how it's a kind of a different phase of his career. Before that, he was known for his body horror. That's why I hadn't seen any of it.
Yeah.
Because body horror doesn't appeal to me.
You bloody love a good body horror.
he's always
banging on. Body horror this.
Body horror. So this, the only reason why I ended up watching this film is because it was based on a graphic novel of which I was aware. So I thought, I'll give this a go. This might be interesting. But it wasn't because it was Cronenberg. And then when his next film was Eastern Promises, again starring Viggo Mortensen, I was like, well, I've got to see it. Yeah. So I'm kind of into him now, but I have no desire to go back to the earlier stuff.
It's enjoyable. Sorry, where did that turn go from? Maria Bello and Viggo Mortensen. And Maria Bello is the MVP for me. When you see her and Tom, well, obviously Joey, but when you see them two interact at the first half of the film, they're a couple that have been loved for many, many years. They have a beautiful family. They've got a beautiful home. They have a business together. They're just very, very happy. As soon as it's revealed that Tom is actually Joey, the look in her face and the way how she interacts with him is completely different, almost animalistic, especially with the scene on the stairs. The ending is, I think, the coup de grace for the whole film, because you don't know whether or not they're going to accept him into their lives and carry on as normal, or if changes are going to be made. And that really is left for the viewer to decide. I love that Cronenberg left it to us to decide exactly what their ending would have been.
That ending is glorious.
It's wonderful.
That sex scene on stairs is
Jesus.
Filth.
Brutal.
God, it's like when you're tapping out the tomato ketchup out of the bottle.
Women are dirty. But it's true. When she does that whole scene in the cheerleader outfit.
Oh, yeah.
It's degrading, Ben.
Sorry.
Which I hate. It's degrading to women.
Hello?
How can I hate women? My mum's one.
Do you know who said that? We can't make this the office.
Come on.
It's all about the violence, as the name of the film would suggest. The violence in this film is unflinching. The thing I always come back to is when Tom, aka Joey, is smashing that gangster's face in. He smashes his nose into his skull.
It's horrible.
And then he's on the floor, he's just a quivering pile of meat.
Yeah.
Fucking love that.
And that's when practical effects will always beat CGI.
Indeed.
Yeah, it looks horrible. His whole jaw's still kind of just about hanging on, but there's that dent in his cheek area. It's gross.
Yeah.
And what he does is he'll film too long. And that's what Cronenberg's so good at. You want to look away now. Come on, move. And he won't pan away.
No. Yeah.
And you're like, ugh.
Yeah,
it stays with you.
Lingers on it.
It's like real life.
It is.
And that's what he does so well. He does this as if you were actually within that time of frame. You were there in that situation.
It's been a long time since all of us have been on the same page.
I think so,
maybe probably about 12 months.
In fact, since we've been doing Movie Masturbate Directors, only once have we had three different films.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that Kevin Smith?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't the last one, it was the one before.
Yeah.
Every other time, two of us have had the same and one of us has had something different. But I think this is the first time where all three of us have agreed.
Blimey.
Yeah.
But obviously he has released other films.
Yes.
So let's go over to social media and see what other stuff he gave us in the movie world.
Jolly good.
Thank you.
On Facebook, Andrew Batchelor has said, "I love Naked Lunch, probably the film I've seen more than any other."
Never seen it.
I thought that was a state of mind.
You're an
what,
idiot.
A naked lunch?
Do you
do that often?
Women are dirty.
Oh, come on.
Proves it.
Disgusting.
I've not seen it.
I know what you meant when you said you wanted a foot long for lunch.
Oh my god.
Filth.
Brilliant. Rob Butler at Tyrant0125 has said, "Gotta go with the remake of The Fly. That movie scared the crap out of me as a kid."
It is great.
It's brilliant.
I can't, even though I said I've only seen three Cronenberg films, I think I might have seen this on TV when I was a kid.
It's one that's always on TV.
It used to be. Yeah. It used to be on ITV a lot.
Yeah, but then Shaun the Dead came along.
Yeah. On Facebook, Alistair James Cornwall. "Tough one between A History of Violence and Eastern Promises, but I would have to go with Eastern Promises. It's a brilliant film."
It's good. It's really good.
We talked about it at length, didn't we? Yeah.
That was really good that you brought that to the table, because I wouldn't have watched it otherwise.
Yeah. And Mr. Hand at Philip Hand 2 has gone the other way around. He said, "Eastern Promises or A History of Violence?" A History of Violence it is. In my top five, an amazing film.
Welcome to the club.
Yep. John Applewhite, a.k.a. Jono Apple, on Instagram has said, "Videodrome. It might look a little dated now, but it still genuinely disturbs me. The moment James Woods puts his hand in his stomach is horrifying."
It is. And again, practical effects at its best. Mm-hmm. It's a horrible film. Arrow released a special edition.
Yeah.
Go and watch it, because the transfer is absolutely fantastic for its age. And the extras and all the making of are worth the money alone.
I think we talked about this before when we were talking about Amazon Prime, but have you got the Arrow channel on Amazon Prime?
I haven't, because I'm a nerd and buy every Steelbook and Blu-ray they release, but for £5 a month, you literally get that whole back cat. It's
a lot of good, no-brainer. There's a lot of good titles.
Because Battle Royale, which we're going to talk about later, that's on the...
And there's a free trial, which you can go and sign up for now, so you get those films for a week.
Get involved. On Facebook, Russell Hewitt. "I'm a child of the 80s, so Scanners." No, wait, Videodrome. Nope, Scanners.
Yeah.
He's finished with Scanners. That's the one with the head exploding.
It is.
Yeah.
Very iconic.
Such a great, great scene.
Anders Holmes at Fabricius91 has said, "The Brood."
Never seen it.
I thought that was like Gangrel, Edge and Christian.
It is, yeah. It was an episode of SmackDown the other week. It was the Halloween episode, and the New Day came out as the Brood in full costume as Edge, Christian, and Gangrel. It was genius.
Did they actually come out from the floor?
They didn't. They didn't. Oh. They did sort of a mock-up of it, but they had the proper music and had face full of blood and
the
all
red
kind of
lights.
Stuff.
I love
the New Day, man.
Amazing.
But anyway, back on track. On Facebook, Clive Bullock has said, "No contest of The Dead Zone. Cronenberg has an amazing knack for making atmospheric movies and bringing characters home in a way that's relatable."
Based on Stephen King's.
Is that right?
Yeah, very good.
Oh, is that the one that there was then a TV series based off the back of it
as
well?
Yeah, which had like three seasons or four, so a lot of it.
I've never seen the film, but I have seen some of the TV series, weirdly.
Yeah, pretty good.
Cool.
The Fourth Dimension at Mike_J_Lord has said, "Dead Ringers, a brilliant psychological thriller and the role Jeremy Irons should have got the Oscar for."
I've not seen that in
years.
No,
I haven't seen it. I don't think at all.
It's a good one.
Yeah, there's so much, isn't there?
Mm.
And then finally on Facebook, Erica Bean said, "Existence. Though admittedly, I think that's the only one I've seen. It was bloody good."
I did watch that growing up at college, I think, and it was actually all right.
The one with Ryan Phillippe or whatever his name is. Yeah.
He used to be like the Ryan Gosling. Everyone used to love him.
He was the top boy for a while, Who did he have a kid with?
Reese Witherspoon.
Reese Witherspoon, that's it, yeah.
Oh, I wonder what happened.
Ruined.
Are you guys horny?
if you like.
Do you want me to masturbate?
Yeah.
All right then. That's a very,
he's insisting.
Drum roll, please. On the next episode of the Skip to the End podcast, we will be masturbating over, this is a nightmare to pronounce, M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah! Yes! Yay!
Our rewatch this time around is the 2000 Battle Royale, directed by Kenji Fukasaku. At the turn of the millennium, Japan's economy is crumbling. Unemployment is high and students are no longer going to school. With no options left, the government approves the Battle Royale Act, where one class is selected at random to be sent to a deserted island, where after 3 days, they have to kill or be killed. Which student will emerge victorious, winning the ultimate prize? Their life! So yeah, that's
beautiful. That's beautiful.
Good.
Thank you very much, guys. I practiced all of a minute.
Oh, I don't get this to your head.
So this is a film that has cropped up in the podcast in previous episodes. From guys who have listened to us, we have waxed lyrical about this film. But this is probably one of the only times where we can really delve into it, get the meat in the bones, and really talk about it. So Ben, I would like to throw this to you first. Tell me why you enjoy Battle Royale and what it means to you.
Don't presume that I do. Yeah. Maybe I think it's cack.
Come on. She's
arrogant.
Come
since she's been ill, she's got arrogant.
Arrogant. Yeah. Arrogant. Let's get rid of her. Benny, are you free on the next episode?
Full time.
We're joking, of course. I am a sucker for dystopian movies. I'm a sucker for Japanese movies. And I'm a sucker for movies where people are forced to fight to the death. So this film is right up my street. It's in my top five films of all time. And it's a perfect film for our current times and our reality TV culture. Love it.
Go on, Mark, beat that.
I like it, yeah. The one thing I will say is I can't believe how controversial this film is because it just wouldn't get made now. No. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. It doesn't matter if they did a remake. It's that extreme. It's that shocking. The deaths are unbelievable.
Yeah.
And it's an absolute blast. You need to enjoy this film. Get people around that have never seen it before because it will blow your mind. And it's the best thing about doing a rewatch. It gives you that test to see if it really is as good as you remember.
Yeah.
I'm not as obsessed as Ben, so I haven't seen it for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually better the next time I watched it. I fucking love this film. It's everything you want.
Yep.
Couldn't agree more. It's simply a modern day classic that I feel is going to define filmmaking in the 21st century. It's a film that shocks, it provokes, it makes you uncomfortable, it breaks your heart. And it's a film that is very, very hard to shift. It's a film that's always going to stay with you. And it's a film that, when somebody says the words Battle Royale, you know exactly what it's all about.
Yeah.
It was way ahead of its time when it was first released, but it's handled in a way that is timeless, and let's face it, is perfect. Nobody could do this.
Let's score it.
Yeah. It's a film that people often compare to A Clockwork Orange, which doesn't surprise me because that's also a film about delinquent teens engaging in violence, and also both of them use classical music to dramatically underscore their scene, so I can understand why people compare them, but it is a marvellous film. Let's start at the start. I love when the kids have first been captured and they're taken to this island and they're in this disused classroom. And we see all the kids who are in that one class, but then we're introduced to the two exchange students. We see Kawada and Kiriyama just sitting in desks in the corner, looking like two of the most absolute badass motherfuckers you've ever seen. How great an intro is that?
That's fantastic. That whole sequence too, when we understand exactly, just like they are, exactly what is going to be ahead of them, what they are going to have to do for the next 3 days. Takeshi Kitano.
Legend.
Takeshi Kitano. That is all I need to say. As the teacher, you've never seen anybody switch off their emotions in a heartbeat, yet takes absolute glee in knowing that these kids are all going to be dead come morning.
Yeah.
He doesn't give a fuck. And that whole instruction video too.
Oh my lord.
Isn't it? How
funny.
The situation that those kids are going to be in. And you've got this right prepper of a lady going, come on guys, you're all going to die and you're going to get weapons. It's genius.
It reminds me of a video you've got when you go on like a Virgin flight and it's telling you where the exits are. And it's all, hello, but you're going to kill each other. And if you don't, you're going to die anyway. And the thing about this, can you actually remember your mindset of when you first saw this? Because for me, I think it was at college or uni. I think Boov is a massive fan of all these Asian films, and he said, sit down, watch this. And I just sat there, because remember, the first time you don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
So you see this classroom and those kids, and that first time they have that long shot, which is now made into posters, of her face and her eyes looking into the camera, and the way it just slowly pans out, and that evil smile, which you've now seen imitated in Kill Bill and everything else.
Yeah.
It's disturbing mm-hmm. on a level of no other. But when did you first see it, Ben? Were you at uni or has it been more recent?
It would have been whenever it first came out in the UK. Yeah. So I think it was released in Japan in 2000. And I think it wasn't released in America for something like a decade, mm-hmm. but we got it a lot earlier than that. Yeah. So it was when I was at uni. I would imagine it would have been about 2002, something
CD
like
wow.
that. It probably was it a was, CD wow yeah. in Port Job. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
$8.99.
Sure. But yeah, I wish I could remember what my initial reaction to it was. But I can't, it's been so long. But Gemma, I just want to piggyback off what you were saying there about Takeshi Kitano, who plays the teacher. Takeshi Kitano is one of the oddest cases in film history. He is the Japanese Robert De Niro.
Okay.
He's award-winning, he's in these massive films. He is their film icon. But he is also the Takeshi of Takeshi's Castle.
No!
You know the wacky game show Takeshi's Castle that has mental Japanese people doing stupid shit?
Yeah.
Oh my God, my mind is blown.
So when they get to the final thing and there's a little guy in a little buggy going around, that's Takeshi Kitano. So that would be like Robert De Niro presenting Funhouse. Imagine that.
Or doing Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Oh, yeah.
But imagine, I now want to see De Niro doing Funhouse with Martina and Melina or whatever.
Oh, the twins. Yeah.
Who led a fun and a present to be won? I can't believe that's the real Takeshi.
That's Takeshi.
Shit, man.
How odd is that? That's your two careers there.
That's how you do it, though.
Yeah. But anyway, we digress. Wow. He is absolutely amazing in this film. Obviously, they leave this classroom and they go out there and they start killing. But it's not just about the killing. How many killings? It's not just about the killings. I love the fact that there are mini stories within the major story.
Yes.
So, for example, you've got Chigusa, who is the girl or the woman who was eventually picked up by Tarantino to play Gogo Yabari
yes.
in Kill Bill. Her character, you see her very briefly at the start of the film, and then you don't see her for half an hour. Then we're introduced to her again, and we see her running alongside, it's a flashback, her running alongside a guy on a bike.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realise they're good friends. And it comes back to the present day. There's another guy who's infatuated with her. He then basically tries to rape her. Yeah. She kills him. Then she runs into Mitsuko, who's the crazy psychopathic bitch. And Mitsuko kills her. And then just as she's dying, the guy who was riding along the bike with her, he finds her and he holds her as she dies.
Yeah.
And all that happens in one sequence. It doesn't cut between the other stories. It's a mini story, a self-contained mini story within the larger story. I think that's brilliantly done.
And Mitsuko, I think she has one of the saddest backstories because you don't really understand until at the very end. You just see her as this bully who's bullying Noriko in school.
Yeah.
But it isn't until it realises that she was actually sexually abused, or she was going along that route when she was a young girl, and you can kind of understand the nuances of her just all of a sudden just letting go and going, you know what, fuck this, I'm going to kill as many people as I can to get off this island and look after number one. It's operatic.
Mm-hmm.
It is so operatic, and obviously with the music of Strauss and Verdi and Bach, it just culminates in like this Japanese opera.
That's exactly the best way to say it. Yeah. Japanese opera.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, we just talked about Cronenberg, and this is one thing that I want to mention about the deaths, because I saw a lot of, you know, when we do a rewatch, I like to read what other reviews are like.
Yeah.
And people say, oh, it doesn't work for me. The bloods are a bit extreme. It's not realistic. But for me, I like the spray in blood. It's what Tarantino's took onto his film, very much so. But these deaths, for me, seem realistic. I know they're ridiculous at times, but I love the fact that they don't pan away. And this is what we just talked about with Cronenberg. These deaths, you see how they really get their arms ripped off, or how the shots get into their chest. It's not like something like Commando, where it's like, and that's it. Yeah. You're seeing their chest getting shot. And I think it's pretty hardcore viewing to see 40 deaths.
Especially because they're children.
Yeah. And they're children. Yeah. But the way that they fall, the way that they crouch down, it's very realistic for me. So I don't get the side of people that are saying, oh, it doesn't work for me. It's a bit over the top. It's a bit cartoony.
I don't get that.
No, these deaths are how you would fucking die if you got shot with an AK-47 in the head.
Or if you were wearing a necklace that had a bomb in it.
Yes.
If that exploded, your jugular would break and you would piss blood all over the place. That would happen.
There's like an immaturity to how they die because they are essentially kids, and I think one of the best examples of this is the lighthouse scene
which is another self-contained story. It's it all happens
all
in
these
one
different
little story
ones.
That whole sense of, you know, thinking that these girls are, they've decided they're going to be banded together, they're going to survive, they're going to find a way out of this, but then one by one, as they start turning on each other with the poison spaghetti. And then all of a sudden, the paranoia just spreads like a virus so quickly amongst the girls until it culminates that only one of the girls, the girl who originally put the poison in the spaghetti, is still standing. And the line she says before she runs up the lighthouse and commits suicide is, I realise how much I really like them.
Yeah.
And it breaks you. It completely tears you up. And then when you see her body on the rocks, and then it just says about how many, 6 to go.
I love that. I do love the 70
games. The on-screen,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
And you realise just how senseless all of this waste of life is.
Yeah.
It's mind-blowing.
I do love that on-screen score thing, like, boy 15, yeah. Mitsuko dead, yeah, yeah. Girl 16, Mitsuko dead, six to go. Yeah. That's fucking brilliant.
But don't you find, because you mentioned about the self-contained stories, they're no longer numbers.
They're people.
Yeah.
Which is strange, because there are 40-odd of them to begin with, yeah, and you kind of feel like you know them. You can watch a film that has four or five main characters and come away from it thinking, I don't know who any of those people are, they haven't fleshed them out. But we watch this film with 40-odd Japanese kids and you feel like you know most of them,
yeah,
because they defined them so well within these small little narratives. And I liked how they showed that the kids would treat it differently. You had some kids who were like, well, we're fucked then, and they just killed themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
You had some kids who were like, well, I'm going to look after number one. I'm going to go out there and try and win. You had kids who were like, well, let's just band together. We'll refuse to fight. Then you had kids who said, no, let's get a computer. Let's hack into the system and crash it. All of them had their own different ways of dealing with it. And I think that's really smart, because if it would have just been 40 scared kids shooting each other, the film wouldn't have worked. Mm-hmm. It would have been The Hunger Games.
Oh, which I've never seen, because shouldn't everyone compares it to this.
Well, because it's a direct rip-off of this.
Yeah. But done badly.
Yeah.
Don't need that.
No.
And the ongoing, always, oh, did you know that Steven Spielberg, did you know Michael Bay, do you know that this, they're going to do an American remake of, never happened, no. And I'm glad.
Well, thankfully, that all died. Once The Hunger Games came out, the people who were going to make an American version of this went, well, there's no point now, because it's already essentially an American version, which is kind of the one silver lining of The Hunger Games coming out, because I wouldn't want an American version of this.
No.
Well, you don't need one. It's not that hard to read a few fucking subtitles.
Mm-hmm. And that pisses me off, because people, I've had people come to me and they said, like, no, I don't want to watch it because it's subtitled. Are you fucking mad? Because Japan has some of the best films out in the film market whatsoever. They have this creative look on how to portray violence. They have a creative look on how to portray horror. And when it's imitated by Western cinema, like Americans, like Brits, and, you know, maybe one or two, but they do it in a way that it just looks like a straight imitation. It doesn't feel organic.
Yeah.
This feels raw. This feels like they've actually been on the front lines and experienced exactly what is happening with this. Japan is fucking A.
Yeah, and if they did an American remake, all these Japanese kids, just like normal run-of-the-mill school kids, if they did an American version, it would be 40 of the prettiest kids you've ever seen in your life. They'd all look like Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't seem realistic. Yeah. It wouldn't seem gritty.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Let's hope it never happens.
I can't imagine it.
Watch now, next week, announcement.
Yeah. Although there was a point when Tarantino was linked with making it, and if anyone could do it justice, it's him, because he does love the film that much.
You can tell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have any of you seen the sequel?
Oh, mate.
No.
Wank.
Because I've never seen it. I don't know what. Is there only one sequel?
How bad is it?
There might even be two, but the second one, Requiem, is dog shit. So essentially what happens is the character, the lad... what's his name?
Oh, Shoya.
Yeah, Shoya. Shoya Nanahara. When he escapes at the end of the first film, he then goes and joins a rebellion, and it's about them rebelling against the government. And it's a terrible film, but also, incidentally, the story of survivors of the game becoming rebels to rebel against the government is also the plot of the third and fourth Hunger Games film. So, you know, fucking hell, man, it's shameless.
I'm glad I've never watched them. It feels really nice to say I've never seen the Hunger Games.
The thing is, even though they're a rip-off, I like the books. The Hunger Games books came after the film, and the writer of the books has claimed she wasn't aware of the film, which I think is bullshit.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion, don't sue me. But the books are actually quite a good read. But the films, because the books are separate, they're a different medium to the film of Battle Royale, you can kind of forgive it.
Yeah.
But when they then made films of the books, it's like, well, these are just watered down versions of the Battle Royale film.
And they really
which in itself came from a book. That was a novel.
Yeah.
But fuck them.
I'll never watch it.
No, I shouldn't have to.
Weak lemon drink,
indeed.
There's about five of them as well. Fuck that.
Yeah, four. They split the third book into two films. They did the old Harry Potter, we want your money, please. Yeah. Game.
Got to think of the bunts.
Fucking wankers. Going towards the end of the film, when we've got our three survivors, I love when they go into the barracks and Takeshi Kitano, the teacher, he's there, and they shoot the fuck out of him, and he's lying on the floor dead. And they're just getting on with their lives, and then his phone rings, and he just nonchalantly just gets up, goes to his side, he's like, hold on, what? He's not dead. And it's not even kind of like a struggle together. He just pops up, goes
normal,
answers the phone, talks to his daughter, or his wife, isn't it? Yeah. Getting pissed off at her, has a cookie, and then dies. How cool is that?
That is how you go.
But no one questions it.
Yeah. No.
Oh, well,
just
being shot to shit.
Exactly. I mean, if it was an American version, they'd literally be like doing like Hamlet's, like, you know, fifth monologue or something. But I like that.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on the ending then, that they've cheated this system, they're on the run?
Mm-hmm.
Do you like that ending, that it's kind of, it doesn't feel like it's closed because they're still on the run?
Yeah.
So you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know their fate. Yes, they got away, they're not dead.
Mm.
But do you like that ending, that it's left open?
I would like it if they hadn't made a sequel.
Yeah.
If there hadn't been a battle royale,
yeah.
that would have been the perfect ending.
Yeah.
Because the guy who had previously been in the game and he came to help them and he died as they were leaving, I thought that was a great
yeah.
way. And then the two lovebirds are, yeah. they're free, they've broken the system. Perfect. Yeah. Don't make a sequel.
I like it. I'm going to say this by ignoring any sequels or
yeah.
anything that follows up on it. I thought it was the perfect way to end Battle
yeah.
Royale. You
That's
know,
what I loved about
it. It had to come a point during this whole government act that the system finally broke, that there was finally a way out of it, and so therefore they might have saved hundreds and hundreds of kids following on from it. Or it might have meant the games probably got more brutal. Who knows?
Mm.
But I like that. I like the ending.
Do you know what? This is going to make me sound like a fascist.
Do it.
But I really think we should instigate this. I think the Battle Royale Act should become something in this country, because kids are little shits these days.
Yeah.
And, you know, unless we have a good war where they can be conscripted, you know, get drafted into fight,
yep.
they need something to toughen them up and sort them out. So, you know, so Theresa May, if you're listening,
soon.
Yeah. Right, in fact, it won't be. It might not be Theresa May. She might have been, you know, binned off by now. So Jacob Rees-Mogg, you Postman
gross.
Pat-looking twat. If
Massive
you're if you're
twat.
Listening, get on it.
Oh, he's a
so
twat.
You want to actually introduce Battle Royales?
Yeah. Especially now that we're old enough to avoid it.
Yeah.
We're fine, we're cool.
So today's kids now have to start killing each other
yeah.
because they're not respectful enough.
Correct.
Especially ones that are allowed in cinemas.
They're the worst.
That's the ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any kids who are allowed in cinemas or spit in the street
That's
or
gross.
Chew gum.
Yeah.
They're the ones who go on the island.
Constantly graze.
Yeah. Poor kids.
Fuck
yeah. You're not a fascist, it's fair.
So, whilst we're plotting what to do in the world, I think we should score this.
Mm.
So, yeah, Ben, what do you think?
It's 10 out of 10, dude. It's in my top 5 all time. Love it.
Fab. Mark?
9. I love it. It's a great film. Mm-hmm. I just don't love it as much.
Yeah.
It's a great film. It's so well done.
Yeah.
The gore itself is fucking amazing. And the story is amazing. It's just absolutely, everything's perfect. But it isn't the best film ever. I love the sequel more.
Oh, get out.
A 9.
I'm going to go with one of you. I'm going to go with Ben.
Yeah.
It's flawless. It's perfect. There's literally nothing wrong with this film. It's an absolute classic. Keep watching it. If you haven't seen it, please get on it. So that makes Battle Royale a skip to the end. 10 out of 10.
Whoop. Perfect. Wahey. All 10.
That was enjoyable.
Yeah.
Very much so. Whose go is it next?
It's me.
Oh.
So we've done some Stone Cold classics over the last, what, 4 or 5 episodes. So
Let's change it up.
No. There's a film that I've talked about a fair few times, but we've never really delved into it. I don't think it's even come up in a topic. So it's time we did it. We're going to rewatch Richard Kelly's follow-up to Donnie Darko.
Oh!
Southland Tales.
Fucking hell. Great. Yay.
It's time for our brand new game. It's going to be a 3-week game. We're going to be playing 1-on-1 each week.
Wow.
I'm not going to give you the name of the game quite yet. I'm going to explain the game to you first. So here's how the game works in essence. You're both familiar with the website Rotten Tomatoes, I'm sure.
Indeed.
For anyone out there who's not familiar with it, Rotten Tomatoes is a review aggregate website. It pulls together reviews for films and then gives you an aggregate score. A percentage.
Mm.
Yeah?
If you will.
So here, how essentially the game is going to work. I'm going to give you a film, and I'm going to tell you its Rotten Tomatoes score. I'm then going to give you a sequence of further films, and for each one, you need to tell me whether its Rotten Tomatoes score is higher or lower.
Nice!
Very simple.
Yes!
We've done a similar game to this before.
Yes.
Bruce Forsyth would be absolutely thrilled.
It's a good job he's dead, because he'd be suing me otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah? You with me so far? Dead
with
easy.
You.
Dead easy, right? Dead easy.
Can't say dead just after that.
Sorry.
Not
somewhat easy.
Yes.
Okay. Let's make it more complex then. Let's make it slightly
Here
more
we
complex.
Go.
Each of you is going to start the game with 10 points.
Ah.
And the reason why you're going to start the game with 10 points is each time I give you the next film, you have to decide whether the Rotten Tomatoes score is higher or lower. And then you also have to decide how many of your points you're going to bet.
Oh, what the fuck?
Your minimum bet is 1. You have to always bet at least 1 point,
okay.
But the maximum is limitless, or it's up to the amount of points you have. So if you're dead confident, if you think, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's this, you might bet 5 or 6. If you're 100% nailed on, you might go all in. It's entirely up to you to decide how many you bet.
You end up with 0 points.
The game ends.
Oh shit.
So I'm going to give you the initial one and then 10 further films. The game will either end when we get to the final film or if one of you ends up with 0 points.
Oh,
and whoever
no.
has the most points when the game ends is the winner.
That
I could spat all my points
crazy.
On the first go. The shortest game ever.
Yeah. Now, because of this, because you're going to be playing against each other, we don't want to say out loud initially what our bets are going to be because, of course, you know, Gemma might say something and then Mark can react to it.
Okay.
Your bets, they need to be secret. So I'm going to give you all some paper and some pens. So what we're going to do when I announce the film, I'm going to give you a few seconds to decide whether it's higher or lower and how much you're going to bet.
Oh.
Then I'll say pens down. At that point, you can then read out whether it's higher or lower and how many you bet. And then we'll see if you're right and see what you win or lose.
And you want to do this as free rounds, so you need me at one point to take charge and do this.
Yeah.
You idiot.
It's fun.
You're an absolute idiot.
I've made it sound far more complex than it is. Do you want to know the name of the quiz?
Always.
Always.
It's the worst one I've ever come up with.
Go on.
To the point where I'm going to have to explain it.
Go on.
So this is a betting game, yes?
Yep.
Indeed.
You're familiar with the phrase, hedge your bets.
Not really.
You've never heard the phrase hedge your bets?
I have now.
Idiot. So there is a very incredibly famous phrase that everyone on earth except Mark has heard of
yes.
called hedge your bets.
Always.
Now this is Rotten Tomatoes related and tomatoes of course are vegetables. Now technically they're fruit, but for the purposes of this they're a vegetable.
It's not veg your bets.
So the game is veg your bets.
Fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
It took me a month to come up with that.
Fuck's sake. Jesus Christ.
So are you guys ready for round one of veg your bets?
It's happening.
God damn.
Okay.
It's all happening.
So just to confirm, I'm writing down here, higher or lower, and then how many points?
And how many points you're willing to bet.
Cool.
So you both start the game.
I feel like
with,
I'm on countdown.
You both start the game with 10 points. So I will keep a tally of your points and I'll let you know. If ever you need to know how many points you've got, I will let you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your first film, the base level film, I'm going to go with a new release. At the time of recording, Bohemian Rhapsody, in theatres now, is at 62% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
I saw it last week. It's a good film.
Shame. Yeah. Shouldn't have to.
No,
Queen
I'm
of the worst
Mark,
band. Well, you're both dead to me because Queen fucking suck. And anyone who says otherwise is a...
I thought it was about Queens of the Stone Age.
I thought it was about the Queen.
Yeah.
Christ, I hate that band. Anywho, Bohemian Rhapsody, 62.
Okay.
So your first film, Superman Returns, the film starring Brandon Routh, Superman Returns, is that higher or lower than 62?
Okay.
So write your answers down. And how much you're willing to bet. Okay, pens down.
Yep.
So, Superman Returns. Mark, is it higher or lower than 62?
Lower.
Mark's gone lower. And how much are you betting?
5 points.
5 points? Wow, yeah. That's confidence. Gemma, is it higher or lower?
I've got lower.
And how much
have
you got?
I've only done two.
You're both wrong. Superman Returns.
What?
Superman Returns inexplicably has a Rotten Tomatoes score of 75%.
Oh shit, the bed already.
Mark has shit the bed. Mark is down to 5 points already. Okay, this is going to be the shortest game ever.
No, I'm not going to do any more silly things.
Gemma, what did you do? Two.
I only did two.
So you're down to eight.
Yay.
Okay.
God damn, that is showing
higher.
How the world is wrong.
Higher than
I know.
Upstate.
Crazy. So the next film is Gangs of New York. Martin Scorsese classic Gangs of New York. Is it higher or lower than 75%?
Okay.
Okay.
All right, guys, pens down. Mark, what have you got?
Higher.
And how much have you bet?
Five. I'm joking. 1 point.
You've gone for one and you've gone higher.
Yeah.
Gemma?
I've gone higher and I've gone for 2 points.
You're both wrong.
Jesus.
It's lower, 1% lower, 74% Gangs
what
of New York.
What is wrong with the world today?
So, Mark, how much do you bet? One.
Only one.
So you're down to four. Gemma, you bet two.
Two again.
So you're down to six. So.
Okay, so it's not too bad for me now.
You've got to stop being very conservative now, guys,
yes.
Or else this game's over. Next one. Home Alone. Is Home Alone higher or lower than 74%?
Oh, man. Oh, it could be any one of them. Can we put neutral?
Nope.
Okay.
Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Have you both got your answers?
Kind of.
Yeah.
Go on then, Mark. Higher or lower?
Higher.
And how much are you betting?
2 points.
Oh, okay. Gemma, higher or lower?
I've also gone higher.
Yeah.
I've gone for the safe 1 point.
You're both wrong.
No
way!
No
stick.
It's lower
what?
At 62%.
That is complete nutter bullshit.
I've got 2 points.
So Mark is down to 2. Jemmy, did you bet 1 then?
I did bet 1.
So you're down to 5. So at the minute, guys, we're not even halfway. Mark has 2 points left. Gemma's got 5.
Should we see who loses first?
Can we sell points and buy?
No, there's no trading.
Okay.
We're like Phantom Menace all of a sudden.
Next one.
Why did I go 5 on my first game?
I don't
know. You're a nutter.
Yeah. Cocky son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Next one. Thor, The Dark World. This was the second Thor film. Mm. Is that higher or lower than 62%? Mark, what have you got?
I've gone higher because nothing has made sense so far.
Okay.
And I'm only going to go 1 point.
Probably for the best. Gemma?
I've gone lower.
And how much have you bet?
1 point.
Mark is
well
right.
Done.
Yes, back in the game.
So Mark has got 3. Gemma's now down to 4.
This is
tense stuff.
This is great for the listener.
Next one. Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
The first one.
The first one.
Okay.
Is that higher or lower than 66?
Oh my goodness.
Bearing in mind, Mark, you've only got 3 to play with. Gemma, you've got 4.
Okay. My God, my brow is sweating. Sweating.
Mark, what have you gone with?
Higher.
And how much have you bet?
2 points.
Okay. Gemma, higher or lower?
I've got lower.
And how much have you bet?
1.
Gemma is correct.
No!
Gemma's up to 5. Mark Bastard. Is down to 1 point.
It's all right.
So, Mark, bearing in mind, your minimum bet is 1, so this could be the end for you, pal, if you don't get this right.
I feel like I've done well to come this far.
You're just grateful that you're here today.
We're only about to do the 6th of 10, so you've not really come that
far. It's not too bad, though. It's all right.
Okay, you ready for the next one?
Okay. Yes.
Vanilla Sky. Oh. Is that higher or lower than 46%?
I keep thinking of, like, IMDb top 100.
Me
I've got
too,
to stop thinking
I know,
of that.
I know.
Mark, what have you gone for?
Lower.
And how many? Well I know how many you bet.
1.
Gemma, have you gone higher or lower?
I've gone higher.
And how many have you bet?
I've gone a risky 2 points.
Ooh, Mark is right.
Oh! Yes!
So Mark is up to 2 and Gemma is down to 3.
Oh
yes!
God!
This is a race to the bottom for you two.
The only way is down.
We are literally scraping the barrel.
We are.
Indeed. Next one. You ready?
Yep.
Okay.
Con Air. Higher or lower than 42%? Mark, what have you gone for?
I've gone higher.
Yeah.
And you've got to risk it in life sometimes.
Yeah.
2 points.
Oh. If he gets it wrong, he's out the game.
Okay.
Gemma, have you gone higher or lower?
I've also gone higher.
How many points?
And I too have done 2 points.
You are both right.
Yes!
So Mark is up to 4, Gemma is up to 5.
Put the points back in the box.
Back in the game.
Brilliant.
Next one. The remake, starring Ben Stiller, of Starsky and Hutch.
Oh.
Fucking hell.
Is that higher or lower than 55%?
How many points have I got?
You've got 4. Gemma's got 5.
Oh, man.
So Starsky and Hutch, higher or lower than 55%?
Oh, man, this is getting interesting.
Mark, what have you got?
Lower.
How many are you betting?
3 points.
Ooh.
I've got no more air to
Gemma, play. What are you going with?
I've gone higher.
How many points?
I, too, have got 3 points.
Gemma's right.
Yeah!
So Mark is down to 1 and Gemma is up to 8.
Oh,
so
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Gemma's won the game. Gemma's too far ahead of you now for you to win, Mark. But we'll finish off. We'll keep going.
Yeah.
We've only got 2 more left to play. So if you get
unless
this,
Gemma,
if you get,
unless Gemma bets 7
well,
on
that's
the next
true, actually.
Go, Gemma, she's got balls.
Gemma could lose her brain
yes.
and do something ridiculous
on,
to
Gemma.
Lose the game.
Mark, for the listeners.
I don't have balls.
Do it for the listeners.
I haven't won a game in so long.
You ready for the next one?
Yeah.
Jumanji, the original Jumanji,
oh,
the Robin Williams Jumanji.
Okay.
Is that higher or lower than 63? Mark, you've got 1 point. Gemma, you've got 8.
Okay. Let's do...
Higher or lower than 63 for the original Jumanji? Mark,
okay.
What have you gone with?
Can we make this the real quiz?
Oh!
It's higher.
Okay.
How and many... I can only bet 1
of course,
point.
Yeah.
If I get it right, on 68%, mm-hmm. I reckon, you let me win the whole game.
Yes, I agree.
Okay, Gemma.
Bearing in mind why I would have agreed to that, Mark.
Yeah,
bearing in mind I know
wrong.
The answers.
Yes.
I've also gone higher.
Yeah.
And I've gone 3 points.
You're both wrong. It's
oh!
lower. It's 53.
Out, oh! out, out,
so
out.
Mark is out with 0. Gemma, you finished on 5. So
Way-o.
Gemma is the champion. There was only 1 left. So just for fun.
Oh, okay.
Funsies.
Let's see if you get it right. So
right.
Jumanji was 53.
Okay.
The final one was Star Wars The Phantom Menace higher or lower than 53%.
Why am I writing down?
You don't need to write it down. You can just tell me.
I'm going to say lower.
Higher.
It is higher, Mark.
Oh,
it was 55%.
That's the real quiz.
That was the real quiz. And in fact, there was also a tiebreaker. In case you would have finished the game with the same score, there's one more film, and closest to it would have won. Close, if you have to tell me the score. So let's have a go at it.
Macamay.
In fact, I'm going to get my phone so I can work out the maths of it. Okay, so the film is Napoleon Dynamite. God. Mark, what do you think Napoleon Dynamite's score is?
71%.
Gemma, what do you think Napoleon Dynamite's score is?
66%.
Inexplicably, it's 71.
Yes!
Mark got it exactly right. It's a shame he'd already lost.
I know, yeah.
Because that's fucking insane.
That's the real quiz.
Just let him have this moment.
I've thrown a shoe over a pub. What have you done? Fucking hell.
Just let him have the moment.
Nailed it. Mental.
Well done, Mark. Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah. But Gemma wins the extra game. Gemma wins the first round of Veg Your Bets. It's time for Skip to the Recommend. It's that time of the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now, and we want you to enjoy it too. Stop singing along. I'm a one-man show.
So hard not to.
Anywho, normally we've only got a couple of weeks to come up with stuff. We've had a month, so I'm expecting some big, good shit from you guys.
Oh dear.
Don't let me down.
Oh,
don't
let me down. Dear.
I've got a feeling Mark will let me down. So I'm going to get to Gemma first.
Thank you. I've gone for a Netflix film.
Oh.
Released only a few days ago.
Oh.
You can't have the Ballad of Buster Scruggs twice.
No. I've gone for a film called Cam.
I've seen it advertised on the main screen.
Okay.
I thought it was Cam. Like a
Cam. C-A-M.
Okay.
C-A-M.
I thought it was porn.
It stars Madeline Brewer, and she's most known for playing Janine in The Handmaid's Tale. And she plays a character called Alice, a live webcam girl who aspires to break into the top 50 erotic performer list.
Degrading.
Ooh, count me in.
No.
Have I got you by the Buster Beans?
No, not at all. It sounds degrading, which I hate.
So as she starts to climb the chart, one day a doppelganger takes over her page and starts to take her place. So she starts doing videos instead of the real Alice. So what she's got to try and do is claim her page back, but the duplicate has made this impossible to do so. So she's got to delve into who this person is while trying to prevent it from taking over her online persona and her actual real life. But it's brilliant. Big kudos goes to Madeline Brewer, who plays Alice, and she is a star on the rise. Anybody who's seen The Handmaid's Tale will know this as the tragic Janine.
Yeah.
But she's outstanding in this. She really flourishes as this confident and ambitious Alice, and she's in control of who she interacts with and who she can block, preferably the arseholes that come onto her chat page. But also, it's written by a lady called Issa Macy. Now, she's an ex-cam girl, so she knows all about the world of live sex shows. And she understands the nuances of what it is to be a webcam girl, and it doesn't feel degrading in any way, shape, or form. So
it does.
So in the past, in media, in films and TV shows, sex workers are often depicted as, you know, murder victims, or they're brutalized in some kind of shape or form. This isn't the case. This is actually quite refreshing because they come across as quite confident women. There's little to hardly any violence against them too. But the story itself is actually quite gripping. It's a horror, it's a thriller, but it's a film that, you know, I don't watch webcams in my spare time, contrary to popular belief, may I add.
She does.
But it demands your attention. The cinematography is really impressive. And it's a great, fun film. I really, really enjoy it. And I think you guys will too.
There you go.
I've
not heard of it. So you're familiar with it, Mark?
I've seen on the Netflix main screen. Because obviously this big one by the Coen brothers wasn't there. I had to search for it, but Cam's there.
How odd.
It's very creepy.
Yeah.
It's a creepy film. As it starts to kickstart into gear, it's quite disturbing. Linking with the top
three. I like what you're doing, yeah.
But it is fantastic. It's really, really well done. Really well written as well. And Madeline Brewer, watch out for her.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I won't watch it, but it does sound good. That's not in a negative way, as in I've just got too much to watch.
Yeah.
I've got The Office for the 9th time in a row.
Jesus.
Go on, Mom, what have you got?
I've got an album.
Oh, yeah?
It's the brand new album by the Smashing Pumpkins.
Ooh.
Came out on Friday. It's called Shiny and So Bright, Volume 1.
And is it shiny and bright?
It's pretty damn good. What I will say is I felt a little bit short-changed because it's only 8 tracks.
Oh, again?
Yeah,
sick of it.
That annoys me. Lazy. I just think, you know, what are you doing? Queens of the Stone Age only gave us 8. If it's 8 amazing tracks, I'm fine with it. But this is probably 4. So it's damn good. It's a return to form. It sounds a lot like their early stuff, like Siamese Dream. There's a song on there called Solaro, which is absolutely fucking incredible and reminds me of the real old Pumpkins where they really care.
Mm-hmm.
But they have got Jimmy Chamberlin back on drums.
Yeah.
They've got James Iher on guitar back from the original lineup. They didn't get Darcy. She was, I think she's got some lawsuit or there's some really bad stuff going on. I think she might be in rehab. I don't quote me on that, but it's not good. Yeah. It's not good. That's the way to say it. Yeah. And there's a song called Silvery Sometimes, which sounds just like 1979. So it's a real classic sound.
Yeah.
And Billy Corgan has never sounded better. His vocals are great. His lyrics are great again. He gives a shit again. He went into that Axl Rose period of being a dick, coming on stage late, being an arsehole, thinking he's actually Jesus, but they've come back. I went to see them in London a few weeks ago. They put on a hell of a show, 38 songs, 3.5 hour set.
No, 38 fucking songs.
Yeah, just absolutely nailed it. God, this band sound great, and they seem to be... He goes on Instagram, right? And what I like about some people is they interact with their fans. Some people, you tweet CM Punk, you're never going to get a reply. Mm-hmm. Love the guy, but you're never going to. Whatever you send to Billy Corgan, he'll reply. He might call you a cock in front of his whole people, but people say, what inspired you? What did this? If it's a shit question, he'll call you out.
Yeah.
He'll put a screenshot and say, what a stupid question, you idiot.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask him something decent, he'll always take the time. And I sit there and read them all the time when I'm on the toilet. I sit and read what he's saying.
Yeah.
But this album is great. I just wish there was more. I can't just have 8 tracks.
And did they play much of the new stuff when you saw them live?
2 songs.
Yeah.
They just played all the old stuff, which people want, which I'm happy with.
Exactly.
Siamese Dream is the one, isn't it?
Yeah. He's such an odd fellow, Billy Corgan, because he used to be a pretty liberal dude.
Yeah.
And then in recent years, he's gone super right-wing. He's into real stupid conspiracy theories, and he ends up on like Alex Jones's show and all that kind of shit.
The only good thing is he's had a kid recently. I think they're about 2 years old now, and he has straightened out a bit.
Good.
He isn't doing Trump stuff. He's done none of that. He's just keeping away from it and focusing on the music. And I think maybe, it sounds weird, but the band members went, look, we'll come back, but let's just do the band. Stop being a dickhead, because it's worked.
Fair enough.
But yeah, really good album. It's on Spotify now. Check it out. 8 tracks. Really good.
Lovely stuff.
And it's short, so Mark likes
my attention span is there. Yes.
Okay, so we've had abused sex workers and right-wing musicians.
Yes.
Keeping up that the dark, deep stuff. I'm going with a video game.
Oh.
It's Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu for the Nintendo Switch.
Oh, nice.
It only came out 2 days ago on Friday, and I had it delivered on the day, or I didn't quite have it delivered on the day, which I'll explain in a minute. But it's the first full Pokemon RPG for a console. Every previous Pokemon RPG game has been for the handheld, the Game Boy, Game Boy Advance, DS, etc. And it's based on the classic Pokemon Yellow. It's essentially just a revamp of that game, but with elements of the mobile game Pokemon Go that people know from their iPhones and so on. The game's exactly what you'd expect from a Pokemon game, but with a few cool twists, especially the fact that it comes with a special controller that looks like a Pokeball.
Nice.
You strap to your wrist and you throw it. It's got motion controls in, so you throw it and press a button and it catches the Pokemon for you. I've barely scratched the surface of the game. I think I've logged something like 9 hours in 2 days. In fact, I bought a Switch specifically for this game. So not only did I have the game delivered, I had the machine delivered.
Nice.
Because I am an unabashed Pokemon nerd. I do not care. I'm happy to admit that I'm a 35-year-old man who fucking loves Pokemon. And I always have.
That's all right.
I've loved Pokemon for 20 years. You talked earlier, I think it was in Stand By Me, the quote you gave about your friends when you're 12. My friend Macca is one of my closest and dearest friends, and we've known each other since we're 11 years old. And when we were at school, when Pokemon first came out, our free periods when we were supposed to be doing homework or studying, we used to draw pictures of Pokemon.
Oh,
we would just be drawing Snorlax and Charizard and just comparing each other's pictures. And then when we were in A-levels, we did A-level economics together. And not once did we listen to Mrs. Crammond talking about Keynesian economics or supply and demand or opportunity cost. We'd be on the back row with our Game Boy Colors linked together so that we could be swapping drowsies for matchups.
I love it.
And we're still Pokemon nerds to this day. So we go to the football together, Macca and I, and last weekend after the game, we were in the pub talking about this game coming out, how much we were looking forward to it, talking about the trailer for the new Pokemon Detective Pikachu.
I'm so excited.
Have you seen the trailer for that?
Yeah.
Looks great.
It looks
brilliant.
Fucking amazing.
Let's review it.
Definitely,
because
I am super jazzed for that. I think it's going to be great.
So has Macca now got the game as well?
He's not got it yet, but he's going to get it. He's going to get it, yeah. But, you know, Adam, our old friend Adam, who used to do the show with us, he's another Pokemon nerd as well. And, you know, we don't care.
No.
We're adults and we don't give a shit because it's fucking fun and we like it.
But you're not one of those people that stand around the clock tower walking around like capturing, because that's a bit weird.
I gave up on Pokemon Go after about 2 minutes. It didn't work for me that, you know.
You have to leave the house.
Because people were walking, which I'm not a fan of unless I'm going to McDonald's. But people were walking out in front of cars because they were staring at their fucking screen. I don't like I don't like mobile phones, full stop. You know, if I could get away with not having one, I would. So I don't like that. But the actual console game and the, you know, Game Boy games and stuff, I fucking love Pokemon. And did you know, something I didn't know until I read it the other day, is that Pokemon is now the biggest media franchise of all time. Pokemon, in all its various incarnations, games, toys, tat, has made more money than Star Wars.
What? Wow.
Made more money than Harry Potter, made more money than Marvel.
Wow.
It is the biggest media franchise of all time.
That's really cool.
So I'm not the only 35-year-old Pokemon nerd, clearly.
My favourite Pokemon was Jigglypuff.
I can see you being
Jigglypuff
a Jigglypuff fan. I'm a Snorlax guy myself. I'm all about Snorlax.
I love that you bought the whole Switch just for that.
I did.
Yeah, there's some other good games, you know.
Which I may buy. I don't know. We'll see.
But, Mario.
I love the fact that it's like a handheld as well. So even though it's a console, I've had it hooked up to my TV for about 30 seconds just to see what it was like. And then I've just been playing it in bed. Because it's great. But as I said, I didn't quite get it delivered on Friday.
You mentioned.
So DPD, the delivery company, are the most useless bunch of fucks in the known universe. Mm-hmm. Seemingly every delivery I've ever had from DPD has fucked up one way or another.
Yep.
And they did it again to me on Friday. So because I was going to be at work on release day, I knew there was no point delivering it to my home. I wouldn't be here.
Yeah.
You can have it delivered to a local store. So it was going to be delivered to Matalan. So I arranged for this. I got an email confirming it will be delivered to Matalan after 12 p.m. 12 p.m. on Friday. We'll send you an email when it's there.
Okay.
I then get an email from DPD about 3 p.m. going, "We went to your house to try to deliver, but you weren't in. So now we're going to deliver it on Monday." Then I get an email from them a couple of minutes later saying, "We couldn't deliver it to Matalan because it needed to be signed for." One, if you knew it was a parcel that needs to be signed for, why did you let me agree to send it to Matalan in the first place?
True.
Two, if they only found out on the day that they had to sign for it, don't email me after you've tried to deliver it. Email me before to create alternate arrangements. C, if it doesn't go to Matalan, don't then just think, "Oh, fuck it, we'll go to his house." There was a reason why I didn't let you go to my house in the first place. They fucked me over royally, and I wanted it on the Friday, but they said they were going to deliver it on the Monday. But because they're such fucking useless idiots, I wasn't willing to let them have another bite at the cherry. So I paid 20 quid to get in a goddamn Uber to go to their fucking depot, which is in the middle of fucking nowhere, to fetch my goddamn Nintendo Switch.
I would have given you a lift for a tanner, dude.
Mate's
rates.
He'd have wanted a hand job as well. I wasn't worth selling my soul. I'd rather pay the 20 quid in the Uber. But it's just classic DPD.
So in Matalan, surely Bev, who works, or Lisa, who works, they could have signed for it.
I don't get it. I just, you know, why tell me on the day? Tell me afterwards? Me after the fact. Tell me in advance to let me make alternate plans. But all I want to say is, fuck you, DPD. Fuck you, Sky High.
There you go.
Why even give you that option?
I don't know.
Ben, I would normally ask you this off air, but have you started to read the brand new Beastie Boys book yet?
I've got it, and I haven't started reading it, because my plan was I was going to start reading it this week to bring it as my as my choice, but I've got it, and I'm going to read it.
I've got it. I bought it. Yeah. I saw Amazon. Beautiful cover.
It's so good.
It's a fucking great book. I've only just started it, but oh, man.
I've flicked through. Like, there's so many great pictures and stuff.
That might be a future one.
And I will be getting this.
Yes.
So good.
It's well worth 20 quid.
Shall we talk about what's on social media?
Yes, let's. Important
always
than DPD.
Yeah, oh God.
Everyone is more important than DPD.
Even Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. You know, I've done big turds that are more important or useful than DPD. Quite frankly, fucking idiots. Anywho,
that's Dino.
No.
Roy Barrett, a.k.a. Footy and Flicks on Instagram, has said, "I'm probably the last one to the party, but I've just started watching Outlander and it's pretty brilliant. Also, the lead actress is very easy on the eye."
Great, him.
The lead actress is a woman called Katrina Balfe and she is gorgeous. So I know where he's coming from. I've not watched Outlander. Gemma, it seems like the sort of thing you might watch.
I've not watched it.
Amazon exclusive.
It is on Amazon Prime,
really?
Based on a series of books as well. I hear the books are good. I hear the show's good, but I've not seen it myself.
I'll never watch it, but it is meant to be very good.
Indeed.
Good.
Speaking about massive media franchises, on Facebook, James Clues has said Red Dead Redemption 2.
Yes.
God, it's everywhere.
It's everywhere. Red Dead Redemption 2, in its first weekend of sales, made $725 million. It is the biggest opening weekend in media history. No film has ever made that much money in an opening weekend.
Kabish.
Listen, is it Rockstar that make it?
Yeah.
Rockstar.
We're going to start charging for Skip to the End. We're going to come and beat your ass for that.
Bearing in mind, Rockstar also have the second highest launch with the last GTA game
That's
as well.
That's mad, isn't it? But Red Dead 1, which I did play to death, was incredible. I just don't have time to play these sort of games.
That's it. Yeah,
so busy.
I know.
Busy.
So busy watching The Office. It's bad.
on Twitter, Holly, @_HollyBags, has said, "My Generation, narrated by Michael Caine. It gives a different insight into the 1960s, and it's incredible. It's also just been added to Netflix, so when you can't be bothered to get the DVD out, it's there for you."
It's She's on my list.
Got a point. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to get up.
I'd not heard of this until I read this, and I went and found it on Netflix, and it does look very
Sounds
good.
Awesome. Yeah. Mm.
On Instagram, Danny, a.k.a. Danny McKay, has said, "The graphic novel series Snot Girl by Leslie Hung and Brian Lee O'Malley." Brian Lee O'Malley, of course, did Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, I love his art.
His art is good, but this is a different artist. It's Leslie Hung. He said it's about a fashion blogger with allergies, and the illustration is amazing. And I read the first, I think, maybe 4 or 5, and the story didn't catch me, but it does look brilliant. It's
Sounds
a beautifully
good.
Made book, yeah. Definitely worth a look. Vicky Priest on Facebook has said, "We've just watched The Curious Creations of Christine McConnell on Netflix, and I have to say it's a brilliantly weird blend of gothic cooking show and storyline wrapped into one."
I keep meaning to watch this. This looks delightfully Burton-esque.
Yeah. Again, this is another one that I thought you'd have been all over, because I know you like your cooking
show. I will be. Yeah. I bloody love a cooking show.
Have you heard of this, Mark?
I have not heard of it, but it sounds very good. There's so many coming on to Netflix now. It I watched looks, one about yeah. desserts the other day. Heavenly Desserts? Like, that's probably, yeah. I had to make it up, but it was good. Yeah, it made me hungry.
So, looks so kooky.
Yeah.
This will touch on a conversation we had off air, I believe. Instant Sam at Instant Junk Sam has said, "As the Palaces Burn on Amazon Prime. I love Lamb of God as it is, but my respect for them shot up immensely after watching it." Now, Mark, you said you was it off air? You told me you've been to see Lamb of God recently.
Yes, went to see them. They were supporting Slayer.
Yeah.
But I've never seen this documentary, and there's the book as well. I've heard great. Benny was telling me about the book as well, and it just blows my mind, this story about this band, and I just don't know how they even get the strength now to go on tour again. It's kind of like when you have a car crash. Every time you brake for weeks, you'd think someone's going to hit you. How does this guy go on stage and not worry about someone invading the stage?
Yeah. For those of you who don't know, Randy Blythe, the lead singer of Lamb of God, a stage invader came on the stage, and it was not long after things like Dimebag Darrell was killed on stage. So, you know, musicians are clearly wary of that. So he just threw him back into the crowd, as he's done many, many times before. This one guy happened to crack his skull on the floor and die, and then he was thrown into this European prison for months before he could, you know,
it's crazy.
Prove his innocence.
Bloody hell.
Yeah, crazy
but
stuff.
The documentary is following the band just as normal, and just making a normal documentary, and then this goes off.
God.
Sounds gripping.
And I didn't realise it was on Amazon Prime until Sam said so that's great. Get on
Amazon
that.
Prime is the one.
It is the one.
Amazon Prime.
Better than DPD.
Yeah. Wanking in a bucket is better. Matthew Cartner, aka Matt Carts 18 on Instagram, has said, "There's a book by Paul Tremblay called The Cabin at the End of the World. Such a great read, so much tension, and you just don't know what's going to happen. A truly captivating read."
I've been bought that.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Darren Wolf, you know, our good friend. Yeah, Darren, he bought it me. I haven't read it yet.
Oh, fantastic. Well, report back when you do in about 3 years.
10 years. Yeah. 3 years, you wish. Fuck that.
Russell Osborne on Twitter, @NoNotRelated, has said, "I'd recommend the hilarious Big Mouth on Netflix."
Oh, yes.
Not seen a bad episode yet.
Series
so good.
It's yes, that's brilliant. Right. Yeah. The first two seasons are great, aren't they, Gemma?
It's wonderful. Season two, especially. I wasn't expecting it to get to the level it has, but it covers on things like depression. It covers on things like wet dreams.
Yeah.
It's done in such a charming and just delightful way.
It's filthy.
Filth.
It's absolute
pure unadulterated filth.
And some of the best vocal work. You've got Nick Kroll, Jason Mantzoukas, so many great people in there.
The best one's Maya Rudolph.
Maya Rudolph kills it.
It's the hormone monstrous.
Yeah.
Let's get a big deep bubble bath.
Very good, very good. Jordan Peele in there as well.
Yes,
it's a great cast, a great show. Very, very funny.
Have Never
you watched
seen
any
it?
Of it? No.
You've
get
got
involved,
to.
Man. You
people
dig
have
it.
Told me I'm like one of the characters, so I don't know which one it is. Probably some real filthy mouth.
Whichever the sleaziest.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think of which one it could be.
But yeah, I will watch it.
Yeah, it's very, very good. On Facebook, Simon Williams, "Just listen to The Prodigy's new album, Notorious. Holy hell, what a return to form. I didn't like their last album at all. Overcomplicated and overmixed. This new album is everything a Prodigy album should be." Have either of you listened to it?
No.
I haven't, but I've seen them live, and
me
they
too
were absolutely unbelievable. Mm-hmm. A download, I think it was.
I saw them at Sonosphere about 5 years ago, and they were amazing. I have to disagree with Simon, to be honest. I've listened to the new record only once. Admittedly, I didn't like it. I found it very boring, whereas I loved their last one. So I'll give it another go. I'll keep going, because I love The Prodigy historically.
Yeah, I watched them when they did the Invaders Must Die tour, and I thought that was fucking fire. But
so good live.
Yeah, they really are.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And then finally on Twitter, JS May at JSMay69 has said, "Homecoming on Amazon Prime. Mr. Robot Sam Esmail has taken a podcast series dripping in paranoia and filmed it in the style of a De Palma or Pakula 70s thriller." Have any of you watched Homecoming starring Julia Roberts
Not
on Prime?
Yet.
It's brilliant.
Wow.
There's only, I think, 8 episodes and they're only half an hour each.
It looks so bizarre, like really quirky.
Yeah. It's brilliant. And have you, either of you ever watched Mr. Robot?
No.
Because that's a great show. And the creator of that show, Sam Esmail, writes it and directs it. And his directorial style is so odd, so weird. And he didn't write this new show, Homecoming, but he's directed every episode. Okay. And his print is all over it. And Julia Roberts, who's never done TV before, is magnificent. You forget how great an actress she is. Because Julia Roberts, in film, she basically plays herself. She's always like the good-looking girl with the big million-dollar smile who comes, overcomes adversity. Mm-hmm. She's never played anything like this before. It's not the Julia Roberts she used to. She's magnificent.
Sign me up.
That's great. Homecoming. I've missed her on screen,
dude. As I say, I think it's either eight or ten episodes, and they're only half an hour each, so you can murder that.
Yeah. Bite size, isn't it? Involved.
It's known that I'd have to sacrifice The Office Series 8. But no, genuinely, I'm on Series 8 of The Office again, and I've got something new to watch. So that's the one.
Yeah,
Julia Roberts, man,
so good.
Brilliant.
Cool.
So keep your recommendations coming in. You can get us on Twitter at STTEpodcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or old school email podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. It's good to be back, isn't it?
Always.
It is. I feel refreshed.
I do.
I feel happier.
Yeah. Energised.
Yeah.
I thought there might be a bit of a slog.
Nah.
You know, when you've been away from something for a while, it takes a while to get back into it. But we're on it like this.
We blasted.
It's good.
Yeah.
Hot.
Brilliant. Gemma's been quite poorly. This isn't a big secret. We don't mind letting some of our listeners know the ins and outs.
Well, and it's up to Gemma, isn't it?
You've probably noticed that we've not had any videos and she's been quite unwell.
Yeah, I have.
This is true. You've seen no activity and it's been bad.
Some might say lazy. We're saying unwell.
But I was in a certain shop the other day and I was looking around and I actually bought you a present because I felt that you've been quite poorly. So I went to Primark and you might think, oh God, but I found something that I want you to have because as soon as I saw it, I bought it there and then.
Okay, I'm going to use my stronger arm.
So this is something I saw, and as soon as I saw it, I thought, I need to buy this. It's not something silly. You'll be like, that's cool.
Whoa! That's awesome! Oh, sorry, what, Ron? So Ron's dead, but in the place, he got me his shining sweatshirt. That's amazing.
Pretty cool, isn't it?
With the twins.
Yeah.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
Because you've been poorly.
What have you got me? My turn.
When you're ill, Ben.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Which you wouldn't do because you're a man.
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to lose listeners.
Well, you know.
I don't mean it like that.
Illness is weakness. I don't get it.
So on the next episode, I'll bring you a jumper. It might be a Christmas one with a Grinch on.
Thank you, dude. That's really appreciated. Thank you.
So let's talk about what's coming up on the next episode. Let's
Primark.
Let's put this behind us.
We don't want free shit from Primark.
I don't know. I like their socks.
Yeah.
If Primark want to give me free socks, I'm down. Anyway.
They're made by kids in Africa for like 2p a week.
I don't care.
Okay.
I don't live there.
Okay.
They're not my kids.
No.
Why am I bothered?
And if they are, put me in a battle royale.
Whoa! Yeah.
So what have we got on the next episode?
Wow.
Well, we've actually got a choice. So there are two movies coming out on the same day, both of which I'd like to see.
Oh.
We've got Creed 2.
Oh, yes.
About Creed from Stanton.
From
The Office.
It's about what Creed's been up to since the end of The Office.
Oh, my God.
Really looking forward to it.
If that was real.
It's going to be amazing. And also, we've got Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Yes.
I'm up for both.
Me too.
Well, No.
Too much work in it. So we need a way to decide. So I'm thinking we flip a coin.
Let's toss.
Shall we all have a toss?
Let's
toss right now.
Yeah.
So... I've got a coin in front of me.
Toss.
Heads. heads is Creed.
Okay.
Okay.
Tails is Ralph.
Okay, let's do it.
I'm going to flick it.
Right.
It's Tails, it's Ralph.
Awesome!
We're watching Ralph Breaks the Internet.
That's awesome.
It is awesome, yeah. What is our topic of conversation?
It's our, well, to go lovely with the upbeat confidence and all that, it's our top three most disturbing films of all time.
Yeah.
So that's a nice one. But it's all more about the reasons. And if you contribute, which we're very grateful for, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, put your reasons why, because I love reading them.
Please do.
Don't just write a list of free titles. Boring.
That'd be
lazy.
Terrible. Gemma, who are we masturbating over?
We're going to be masturbating over M. Night Shyamalan.
That'll be good.
Yes, it will be good.
He's got some shit.
Got some atrocious films, but some very bloody good
but
ones.
But amongst those turds is a diamond somewhere.
Yes.
And
we'll polish it.
You've got to look very closely.
Just got to dig deep.
Get your face right in the shit.
Yeah.
But you'll find them diamonds.
Yes.
We'll be playing round two of Veg Your Bets. We've also got my...
Don't just say it so casually. You know, that famous Veg Your Bets.
Veg Your Bets.
We've also got my rewatch pick, which is Southland Tales. Mm. If any of you out there have never seen Southland Tales, which will be all of you, because no one has, seek it out one way or another, because it's the weirdest fucking film. It's so odd.
And me and Mark are going in dry, aren't
You're
we?
You're going in bone dry. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys think of it. I'm not expecting you to like it. Don't worry about that. Don't feel like you need to like it. Okay. I'm just interested to what you think, because it's weird as hell.
Let's do it.
We're going to have some amazing prizes to give away.
Always
and
do.
And announce the winners of all that great stuff today.
Yep.
I can't wait.
We'll have our skip to the recommendations as usual, so get those into us. Before we wrap up the show, though, we want to just finish it on a kind of a somber note.
Oh.
One of our heroes died this week.
Mm-hmm.
R.I.P. Stanley.
That's sad.
Really sad.
And not just as movie fans, obviously the Marvel Cinematic Universe only exists because of what he did and his co-writers did. But, you know, growing up myself as a comic book reader, as are millions of people around the world, you know, it's not just that he wrote comics, that's great, but it was the kind of things he did in comics. So in the 60s and 70s, he was writing things like the X-Men, which were thinly veiled analogies for the civil rights movement, or, you know, they represented gay people, any people who were outsiders and who were overlooked and oppressed. That's who the X-Men were, the mutants who were under the thumb. He was such a forward thinker, such a good fucking dude. And, you know, people argue that maybe he took credit for more than he deserved and all that kind of stuff, but it's not the time to have those conversations.
No, not at all.
It's the time now to appreciate everything that he's given us.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
So R.I.P. Stan.
R.I.P. Stan.
This episode's for you.
Big time. Right, shall we call it a day?
Yes.
Okay.
See you in 2 weeks.
Excelsior!
As we slip into the